Hello, ladies and gentlemen. We are live. It is Friday, actually, January 26, 2018, and I'm here for a very special episode. And this is episode number 88 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. And of course, I'm your host, Big T, right here with you. And you might be asking, why am I uploading a podcast or what am I doing on a Friday afternoon just randomly or early Friday evening? Well, answer is very easy. I have an incredible guest here with us today that's going to talk with us, and I'm so excited to do this interview. You may remember this man from his days in TNA. In the tag team Ink Ink with Shannon Moore, we have professional wrestler Mr. Jesse Neal here with us today. How you doing, Jesse?
I'm doing good, man. I appreciate you having me on the show.
Hey, thank you for coming on, man. So I want to start off with the very simple questions. Let's start nice and simple, you know, just to get that ball rolling here. When approximately would you say that you professional wrestling first caught your eye, and then you thought to yourself, you know what, this looks pretty damn good to me. I want to be a professional wrestler, you know, this is what I want to do. By the way, Jesse, I didn't tell you off air, but I'll say it now because all the fans already know this. This is an uncensored podcast, so anything that comes to your mind, if you happen to use some language that sometimes, don't worry about it. It's an uncensored podcast all the way.
That's good. I'm still a sailor at heart, so that's good.
There you go. So yeah, when you first ran across pro wrestling, when did you get that passion where you thought, you know what, I want to do this with the rest of my life. I want to be a professional wrestler.
I mean, I was really young when I first got into wrestling. I would my uncle, actually, a long time ago, when I was like 8 or 9 or probably even younger than that, I would start watching it then, you know, WWF days and stuff, and I just really got into it then, man. Like, I even watched, like, even older stuff and just got into all kinds of wrestling. That's what piqued my interest right then and there. Like, kind of like the superhero aspect of things. And not just the wrestling, but more of the fighting and, like, superhero stuff. Because, I mean, it was real to me back then. You know what I mean? So, yep. That's kind of where it all started.
You know, it's that's kind of how, you know, I drew interest from it as well. When I first started watching and I saw the characters and just, you know, everything come to life in the ring, man, it just pulls you right in.
Yeah, man.
So now let's talk about, we established when you first got in, you know, got in tune with pro wrestling. Now, was pro wrestling something that you always wanted to do? Was it always on the radar? What were some of the first steps you took? Was pro wrestling the first step that you took in your journey, or did you take another path beforehand?
You know, I mean, I'm not one of those guys that, like, dreamed of it ever since he was a little kid, and just that's all he dedicated his life to. I'm definitely not one of those guys. I mean, I as everybody knows, I went in the military. I served 4 years in the Navy. I'm with you at the school. Went through some traumatic stuff there and did my part, you know, for the country and came back home, you know, I tried to come back home in one piece, but, and then, like, I jumped from job to job after that a little bit, you know, trying to find myself again through, you know, dealing with the difficulties of coming out of the military and stuff. And then I was bouncing one day at a club, and it just happened, I'd seen a friend of mine, and she turned me on to Team 3D Academy. And, you know, the very next day I went down there, and I'm like, I basically went on a whim, you know what I mean? I'm like, you know what, I'll just check it out. So I went there, and the first person I met was Bubba Ray Dudley. So I met him, I shook hands with him and signed the contracts and got it started right then and there and never looked back.
Wow, Bubba Ray, the first guy you met, huh?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
How was Bubba? Was that back in the time that he was with TNA, or was that before his TNA day?
That was TNA days. It was pretty intense, man, because I mean, honestly, I've never I never met a wrestler in my life. I've never, you know, on a whim, so I didn't even know what to expect. But then as soon as I walked through the door, there's Bubba Ray Dudley. So, and he's, you know, larger than life, and he's a character in his own, you know what I mean? So right off the get-go, I knew it was serious. I sat down and talked to him. I told him, you know, certain things in my life. I was 27 years old when I first started wrestling, and I told him, you know, I know it's a young man's sport and stuff like that, but I'm tougher than all them, and I know I can learn this sport, and I got plenty of respect, and I want to show, you know, the wrestling world and the wrestling fans, you know, that I do have the respect and the talent to survive. And like I said, I never look back.
And you know what? That's the one thing you got to do. You know, once you get started, you just don't look back. You go full steam ahead, and that's exactly what you did. If you could fill us in, you know, maybe even for some younger people right now that are aspiring to become pro wrestlers and get into, you know, your line of work.
Yeah.
What was the training like when you first started, like getting your first taste of it? I mean, was it harder than you expected? Was it easier? What did you expect going in, I guess is what I should say. What did you expect going into it? And once you experienced it, how was it, you know, once you experienced it, like the whole deal?
Well, I kind of like my first experience with wrestling because I had no clue. I didn't have any indie guy friends. I went to a few shows when I was younger and stuff just as a fan, you know, never really even thought of the backstage type stuff or the training to get involved. I went there and I've been working out and stuff like that. I just needed a change. And, I had no clue what I was going to go through in training with Team 3D like I did. I mean, it was intense. We were the first class in Team 3D Academy, and it was intense, man. Every day, sometimes 6 days a week. I mean, every single day was intense. There was never an easy day, and I don't regret a single day of it. I mean, it made me who the man I am today, and, I mean, my in-ring stuff, I mean, shows it. You know what I mean? I'm in there, obviously, now. After 10 years of wrestling, I'm in there and all the fans know that they can see it on my face. I'm in there having fun, man. You know what I mean? And it's easy for me, like meaning the athletic part of it. You know what I mean? It's very easy for me to, cause I soaked everything I was taught by Bubba and Devon like a sponge, man. You know what I mean? And I took everything and put it in my back pocket and bring it out whenever I need to use it. Even still today, I still use stuff I've learned on the indies and stuff. So I never really expected anything. I just jumped right in, you know, with everything I had, you know, so, and I mean, I don't regret a single day going to Team 3 Academy. I mean, that was one of the toughest things I actually went through in my life, to be honest with you. I mean, I've said sometimes that it was harder than boot camp because it really was, you know, cause I wasn't forced to be there. You know, the door was always open. You know, you could always leave anytime you wanted, but I forced myself to be there every single day, getting my ass whooped, you know, by Bubba and Devon, and I enjoyed it, man. It was fun for me.
And I can imagine Bubba and Devon being like those old school students of the game, you know, type deals where they took their bumps and they paid their dues for decades, and they know what it's all about. So when they train, they're going to train you guys, you know, just as hard as, you know, incidents that they went through themselves.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, too, especially what makes them different than other schools and most schools is that they do teach the old school way. You know what I mean? There's no easy way about it. I mean, if we do a match in front of them or we do a drill in front of them and it sucked ass, they're going to tell us. They'll be the first ones. They'll get in the ring and beat the shit out of us for it. You know what I mean? And they don't hold back on moves. They don't hold back in training. You know, we do a match in front of them. They want to critique it and all that good stuff. You know, they don't hold back. You know, they don't care about getting your feelings hurt. You know, this is a sport where, you know, you can't kneel during the national anthem and be pampered for it. If you know what I mean, you know what I mean? You'll get your ass whooped, and that's the way it should be. But I mean, unfortunately, I mean, this is my personal opinion with things. You know, unfortunately the business has changed, and I'm talking about an indie level because that's where I'm at right now, you know. It has changed. I mean, there's a lot of people that think they're owed something, and that's just this new way of thinking, which I completely don't understand. They don't know how to earn anything anymore. You know, that I'm not speaking for everybody. There's a lot of great talent, a lot of good people out on the indies, but I'm just speaking about these new kids that, you know, they go to a school for like 2 months and think they're supposed to be a superstar, and they have no clue. It's not that, you know, old school mentality that, you know, this business don't owe you a damn thing. You know, you got to give your whole life and everything that you work for to this business to make it, you know.
Exactly. Exactly, Jesse. You know what? That is so spot on. And, you know, I've seen, you know, or like say when I go to indie shows, you know, a lot of the guys are great. Like I don't know if you've ever heard of this indie company. I always go and watch this, one indie company, AIW Wrestling, Absolute Intense Wrestling in, Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah.
And I always go there, you know, and I watch these guys, you know, and guys that have been in it, great guys. And then, you know, here and there, you'll see some guys, you know, that are, say, the younger kids, you know, just breaking in. And then it's like, you could just tell on them. Like, you can tell. Like, I've been around it long enough, you know, to see and to notice, and I'm sure you as well. I can just notice when someone's full of themselves, and, you know, when I get that vibe just watching someone or just hearing how they talk or how they cut a promo, I'm like, gee, you know, this guy's an actor, you know, he really feels like he's owed something, and that he's the best. Yeah. Like, no!
Oh, yeah, they definitely stand out, man, in a crowd, and they tell on themselves, you know what I mean? And I'm still on the indies, and I literally try to help, you know, and I do a lot of stuff for the companies here in Florida. And, you know, I try to help, and some of these guys, man, it don't matter how much you try to help. They just want to do their own path, which, hey, you know what? They're adult. Most of them are grown adults, you know, and they got to choose their own path, and hopefully one day they'll see it before they ruin their own, you know, wannabe career or whatever they want to do in life, you know what I mean? But like you said, you could tell in their promos, you could tell they just don't give a shit. They think that, you know, you're just reading a script and that's it. No. Man, you got people watching all kinds of places. You don't even know who's going to be watching, you know, that promo or that match. And I mean, on the card, it's like they go in and they sit there and fantasize about their show all week long or all month long. And then they're at the show and they literally just put themselves over on the show, and it's like, you don't do anything for yourself. You don't do anything for the company. You definitely don't do anything for the fans. It's like, you gotta listen to the fans, man. Even still today with this new generation, you still have to listen to the fans, man. That's what matters. And a lot of people don't do that, unfortunately. And that's why, my opinion is I think that a lot of wrestling fans, they're not wrestling fans anymore, man. You know what I mean? They're just watching for that hope that it gets better.
Jesse.
And hopefully it does.
That's exactly what it is. I noticed that too with a lot of wrestling fans. You don't see the old school fans that are real diehard and real passionate about it like myself or like you.
Yeah.
You just see these random casuals, you know, not to knock anybody that's a fan, but you know, let's be honest here. You see these random casuals, or you just see like, you know, just random families around like, oh, you know, here, wrestling's in town, let's go to a wrestling show, let's make a family night out of it. But it's like, do they really care about,
right.
I don't look at it as sports entertainment, like it said, I look at it as professional wrestling as a true sport. Like when you go in there and do a thing, I don't look at it as entertainment, I look at it as a pure art form. You guys are doing art in that ring. You're on that canvas. You are painting that canvas with your art, and you're telling a story.
And see, I feel like what makes it art that we do is that, you know, you see a lot of sports that, you know, the athletes and the players, they don't give a shit about the fans. They don't really care. They're going to get paid. They have their contracts. You know, we're the only, I mean, my opinion is, like, we're the only pro athletes that have to, we're athletics, we have to entertain, and we need those fans. We need the fans. We don't have, you know, contracts in these indie shows. Like you said, you get your families that, on a whim, they're like, oh, I see this flyer, I remember how wrestling was, let me take my kids there just to see how it is. Now that falls on us as the responsibility to keep those fans coming back. And that's why we need to really understand the wrestling business and where it came from, because back in the day, they knew what it was like to hold on to these fans. Nowadays, they don't care. They think, oh, promoters will just get, it's up to the promoter to get the fans there in those seats. No, it's the wrestler's responsibility to get those asses in those seats and keep those asses in those seats coming back for more.
Yep. That's exactly right. And you know, wrestling is, it's not an easy profession, you know, to be a part of. It's really not.
Yeah, you definitely can't just walk in and start, because those guys that actually try to do that, they get weeded out pretty fast.
Oh yeah, you know, and here's the thing. Wrestling is, I'm trying to put this in a right form here. Like, wrestling to me is at least not about fame or fortune or being on TV or even making a name. Wrestling is about, you gotta have love to do this, you gotta have true passion to do this, and you can't care about money or fame. Because if you care about all this...
I'm glad you actually brought that up, because, I mean, that was one of the main reasons why I left TNA too. Because everybody wonders why I left TNA, and I still don't know till today why it's a big mystery. I mean, I know people don't really actually care about Jesse Neal and TNA anymore. Or just, you know, being in TNA anymore, which is fine. I don't care. It's been a while, you know, whatever. But it's like, I was finding myself in a situation where I didn't love it anymore, you know, and it wasn't about the money, because obviously I wasn't, you know, one of the top talents there yet. You know what I mean? I was still new, you know, I was only 3 years into TNA. I had a lot of room to grow and a lot of room to improve. But it's like, I started falling out of love with it, you know, and it's like, there was a lot of politic crap going on, and I didn't understand it, because I don't have experience in that. I was still that new kid shutting his mouth and just doing what he was told, basically, and trying to take the ball and run with it, you know? And I just started feeling down about it, and I felt like there needed to be a big change, you know, not just in my wrestling career, but in my life also, because, you know, people don't think, you know, pro wrestlers are just pro wrestlers. You know, we're living the dream on the road and we're doing everything we love to do. No, we're sacrificing. Like, I've been in the business for 10 years. I mean, I started, I think it was April 2007, and it's been over 10 years now. And I've literally sacrificed 10 years of my life. And people don't want to see that crap. They just want to see, oh, Jesse Neal, he just left TNA because he wanted to bitch and moan and whatever and cry. When they didn't even see that I was the first one in the building and the last one to leave every single day in TNA. Like, I was always the one wanting to drive all the talent around. Even though I was talent too, I was the one driving. You know what I mean? I'm the one sitting there paying my first year, I couldn't even tell you how many times I got knocked out. I couldn't tell you how many times that I'm like, let's do this, you know, and me and some of the boys would just go out there and like just give it all on the line for that one match. And that was just my first year in TNA. You know, people don't want to see all that stuff. They just want to, that's part of the downfall of wrestling, I think, is that you have, and this is where I segregate, marks and fans. Fans are the ones that come out and buy tickets, and they're, you know, it's the religion, you know, they love it. They, you know, they, live by us. They see how hard we work. They appreciate us. You know what I mean? They're there screaming or booing, you know, doing their job, and that's fine. Them are real fans. And then you got your marks. You got the ones that all they want to do is get a rise out of you. They want to ruin your career. They don't want to, you know what I mean? And they have no clue how hard it is. And then they want to, like, a lot of guys on the indies, they have to have real jobs, you know, shoot jobs. And yeah, it's not your office gig and stuff like that, because we're wrestlers, man. You know what I mean? We're putting our bodies on the line every weekend, and most jobs nowadays make you work on the weekends. And they don't want to see all the hard work that we put in, not just on the shows or the training, but we have to still make a living. You know what I mean? We still have to pay bills. We still have to take care of our families. We still have to do things in our normal life. But unfortunately, and that's when I say that's who marks are really are, is they don't give a shit, man. They just want to get a rise out of you. They want to ruin your career if you have somewhat of a career. They want to talk crap about you on social media, which is fine. You know, that's why, like, we put ourselves in the public eye. Like I have, people coming at me, stuff like that on Facebook and stuff like that all the time, which is fine. Come at me all you want, because I'm the one that volunteered to put myself in the public eye. I put myself out there for that, yay or booze. But when you come after family, that's when you cross the line. That's when you go into another realm of not just appreciating the business anymore. Now you're just trying to tear down a human being that's busting his ass on the indie scene. Whether you're good or not on the indie scene, I don't care. As long as you're working hard and you respect the business, I got plenty of respect for you. You know, not for these marks that try to downplay shit. And then, like, the new thing with, like, I'll give you an example, like that whole rape thing with, like, end zones. Come on, man. Like, I mean, granted, nobody was there, only them two, and they know what was going on. And I don't mean to bring that up or get into that, but come on, man. This is just another part of the agenda that people want their 2 seconds of fame. I mean, they ruined that man's career. And don't get me wrong. You know, this is my belief, and this is why I say it. I know some of the women out there probably come to Texas or anything, but I don't care. That's your God-given right to have an opinion. So do I with me speaking it. Now, this whole rape crap, women that come out here and start speaking rape, all they're looking for is fame. Because if you really got raped, and I have friends that have gotten raped, they go to the police. They fill out a report. They get the man arrested or woman because it happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then they want to make this whole rape thing a big to-do. Well, why don't you, instead of protesting and man-bashing, because that's all it is, literally that's all it is. Now, is rape not happening? No, of course it's happening, and it needs to be taken care of. That woman that gets raped, she definitely has a safe platform to go to the cops now. This ain't the 1940s. This ain't the 1950s. You know what I mean? You can go to the cops and get this bastard arrested, because that's what they are if they think they can just take that from a woman. That's like almost taking somebody's innocence, man. I've never been raped, but because I'm always saying yes. But you know what I mean? Like, it's so much horseshit. And now this guy, his career is ruined by, I mean, let's call it like it is, man. 9 times out of 10, it was a chick just wanting to party it up. You know what I mean? I'm sorry, but if a woman got raped, she would be, and I'm not a woman. I've never been a woman that got raped, so I can't really talk. This is my opinion. Again, I stress that. This is only my opinion that it does happen. There are women out there that just look for the fame, that just look for those 2 seconds and think they're going to get, you know, famous off this shit, which this girl, she's not going to get famous. She was found. She didn't even have a police report. You know what I mean? And if that's true, that's pretty shitty, man. Like, you're supposedly got raped. I don't know how long ago, and you didn't even fill out a report. That tells you right there that, come on, man. Like, really? Like, is it really true? And that takes everybody to question things. But you ruined somebody's career. Now, don't get me wrong. If he really did that, then, yeah, his career should be ruined, obviously. But, I mean, it's just too much bullshit, too many people. And I don't know Enzo. I don't know, you know, personally or anything. I met him once. But, you know, I don't know if he worked hard for his career or got lucky or what. I don't know. But he's in the wrestling business, man. It's 365 days a year, so obviously he's working hard, or he did work hard when he was there. So, you know, to take something like that and just throw it away, it's pretty ridiculous, man. And that's where I go back to people just trying to bash wrestlers. And I mean, I know I took it to an extreme right there. That's kind of what I do now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's just, like I said, it's just my opinion only, guys. I'm not trying to throw out propaganda or get people to believe me. You know, just, I'm always the type of person that, you know, open your eyes and see it. And on any kind of level, that these fans, they just try to badmouth wrestlers, and they don't want to see how hard of work it takes to even just be on the indies. I mean, nowadays to be on the indies, it's not that easy. I mean, you can't just run in there. I mean, obviously there are promotions that take people that work for free. Obviously there's a lot of them out there, and you could tell those wrestlers that are working for free. You know what I mean? Like, it's ridiculous. Like, either they're paying their dues, which is good, and that still needs to happen. I remember there was times I worked in a shitty ass bar in Newport Richey. And actually, I'm wrestling in Newport Richey this weekend, which is funny. But I'm actually wrestling with a bunch of guys that I did this in my first year. Me and some of the boys from Team 3D would go out there on a weekday, drive 3 hours in through traffic just to go to this bar and try to get on the show and try to get a match for free. And they ended up paying us in like quarter beers, which is all about the experience. It's paying your dues. It's, you know, knocking down the rings and then going there and having a quarter beer, like these little tiny beers. You know what I mean? And like, wow, I just got my ass whooped and I get a beer. This is the wrestling life. You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty rough, man. And it takes a lot of hard work and dedication to keep doing that. So for, you know, some of these so-called fans, which I call marks, to try to ruin that shit, you know, when they're just sitting naked on their beanbag chair in their mom's basement eating Cheetos, dreaming that they could be in the ring. You know what I mean? Like, that's something different. And then when a wrestler calls them out, it's like, oh, shame on you, shame on you. No, motherfucker, there ain't no safe places in pro wrestling, okay? There's no safe spaces. There's no shame. You're not gonna, you know, hide behind your little politics or I'm just being a fan. No, motherfucker. Like, no, you're not being a fan. You're trying to get a rise out of people. And when you finally do, you play the victim. No, I'm sorry. You're a mark, and everybody knows it.
That was, I'll tell you a little bit what I go through. Cause, you know, now I'm just thinking about, you know, with you saying this, it brought back memories, you know, of a bunch of crap that I had to deal with myself. And definitely great story, by the way, Jesse. I love the way you worded everything too. I love how you're how you're direct and you're just telling it like it is. That's coming off perfectly.
That's me, brother. That's me. Maybe that's why I don't have a real fucking job in pro wrestling.
Hey, you know what? You got to be you at the end of the day, man. You got to be real. Being real is the best way. But I was just thinking, you know, because, you know, there's times, okay, when I talk about, you know, whatever business it may be, sometimes I go off on a tangent, you know, and cuss up a storm and, you know, say, oh, you know, this management sucks or that management sucks or what the fuck are they having wrestler A and wrestler B do? I'll start going off like that, you know, like to be entertaining, you know, to have a character point of the story, you know? Cause you gotta have attitude and you gotta be entertaining. And you know what? It's like Eric Bischoff said years ago, controversy creates cash.
Yes, sir. I've always thought of that even when I worked with him in TNA. That's all I thought about. Controversy creates cash. If your name is being said out there, whether it be good or bad, hey, they're still saying your name and your name is out there.
Exactly, Jesse, because that's the point. That's exactly where I get to. You know, like I'll go off and, you know, I'll do this and do that and have this real outlandish over the top yelling, you know, in tangents. It's all about being entertaining. You gotta have that entertaining side, especially when you're podcasting. And you know what? Hey, if people take it negatively, if they feel I'm really insulting someone, hey, you know what? So be it. But I'm just trying to do what I do. And you know, like last night, and you know what? Even though this is graphic language, I'll say it here on this podcast. Last night there was some asshole, because you know on YouTube they have live chat. And there was some asshole, you know, I'm doing predictions for the Royal Rumble, reading out the whole card and everything, and got some asshole. Now I'm a bigger guy, you know, I'm, you know, probably close to 300 pounds, you know, 5 foot seven. So I'm a big heavy set guy. And I get it all the time, but, you know, this is just one instance. This guy goes like, oh, you're a fat cunt. Fuck you. You're a piece of shit. Go get a job. And then I look at the camera and I say in the microphone, I'm like, you fucking piece of shit motherfucker. Get a job. What do you think I'm doing right here with this podcast? Yes. This isn't work for you.
Yeah, exactly. It's not good enough for them.
Oh, they're ridiculous, man. They are ridiculous.
This country needs snowflakes. You know what I mean? And I know that word is thrown around a lot lately, but it's true, man. Like, I don't understand this world anymore. I mean, just in the wrestling business, we're getting hit just like, you know, every aspect in this country. And, you know, this is a problem, man. For one, the majority wants to play the victim. They always want to bitch about something. Nothing's good enough for them. And they expect everybody to bow down and kiss their ass. And I just, you know, me personally, I never understood that because I don't have that mindset. But, you know, those people, they'll be weeded out one day. You know what I mean? When the time will come. You know, the time will come for that. And it's just, one day it'll come and I just can't wait.
Oh, same here, man. Like you said, the time comes at one point or another. It will. And, I know we talked about your training in Team 3D, and we covered that. And I know you talked about pretty much, you know, how your run in TNA ended. I'm just thinking right now, when you were in Team 3D Academy, is that when you wrestled your first match when you were in Team 3D? Because I'm curious. This is why I asked this question.
Well, that's the thing about, like, everybody thought that I just like, you know, started wrestling as soon as I got to TNA, but I've been training obviously with Team 3D Academy. I was working the indies before I went to TNA. So my first match was actually in Sebring, Florida for a company. And I mean, it was in a shithole. Like literally I walked in this place and I'm like, you know, the first rule of Fight Club, you know what I mean? I stayed that line and stuff because there was blood stains on the concrete and, you know, it was in this like rundown bar that I didn't even think ever opened, but it did. But it was fun, man. I mean, I remember my first match like it was yesterday and it was amazing. You know, my, my parents were there and stuff like that. And it was a lot of fun, you know, and, I mean, even my first match in, TNA, it was with Matt Morgan and he kicked my face off. You know, I couldn't feel my face for 4 days, you know, I'm like, welcome to TV, kid. You know what I mean? And that's awesome. You know, I love that stuff. I mean, I got up and I, you know, I'm like, man, I have another, you know what I mean? So yeah. I fell in love with it very soon. And I mean, the pain was nothing to me. I always put everything into every single match, no matter how much I got paid, no matter where it was, no matter how many people in the crowd. And the people that have actually seen me live wrestle and stuff like that, they know. They know how I am. They know who I am. You know what I mean? I'm always usually the first person to a building and the last one to leave. And that's every indie show. I don't care where I'm at. It's a fact. You know, that's just how I do it.
That's the best work ethic you can have in this business. I will say that. You know, yeah. Be the first one there, be the last one to leave. That proves you got the heart. That proves you want to be there. You know, that this is what you want to do. And, you know, you, with TNA, when you were getting trained, getting signed with TNA come about? Like, when did you get the phone call? Like, hey, you know, you're coming up to TNA. Like,
that was pretty weird, man. That time, cause I was actually, I was getting an extra spot with WWE. They were actually looking at me at that time. And, you know, just to come in to talk and, you know, that bullshit or whatever the hell I was doing then. And I was literally amped up for that, obviously. It's an honor and a privilege just to even get an email or a phone call from those guys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, I was amped up for that. And then, you know, I was in and out of TNA. I mean, Bubba and Devon, they were bringing me in, you know, because I had the look, you know, and I had the look and a story and the ambition and the dedication, you know, that always followed, you know, but I still needed a lot more training. But they were bringing me in because they thought it was, the time was right. And I got to know the boys a lot. You know what I mean? I was in and out of Universal a lot, backstage with TNA. And, you know, I basically went around shaking everybody's hand, doing the respectful thing. And a lot of them were like surprised because they haven't seen that in a while, you know? But I mean, that's what it was. I mean, I was part of the first few students that would be backstage at TNA. You know what I mean? So nobody knew about Team 3D Academy students, you know? And the very first thing they knew about us is the expect level that we had for those guys on TV. You know, they're the ones paving the road for us, you know? So, you know, I definitely showed all the respect. And there was a time when, and I remember like this was yesterday too, man, it was funny, that I was backstage, I was handing out my resume. And now see, my resume, like I didn't have just a piece of paper and just expected them to see my stuff, you know what I mean? Or already know who I am. I went there, man, I had a folder. I had like, I think it was six of them. I had a folder, I had five different 8x10s, you know, two action, one in a suit, one in regular clothes, and I think just one with no shirt off or whatever so they'd see my physique. And I had two matches, one a heel, one a babyface. I had I think it was one promo, and I had them literally on DVDs, you know what I mean, in the back, in a slip, you know, and a full-out resume, you know, and I got great reactions from Jeff Jarrett, Vince Russo, and they're like, this is your resume? And I go, yes. And he goes, and Vince Russo goes, he goes, I can do this? I'm like, yes, sir. I have five more. And he goes, awesome. And he just looks at Bubba, and Bubba just, you know, gives a little nod, you know what I mean? So it's like, of course, Bubba knows how to train people, you know what I'm saying? So there was a meeting backstage. There was a taping going on. And I was that type, man. I stood back by the gorilla spot, just watching everything, learning. And I mean, I didn't have a contract. Nobody remembered my name, you know, that type of stuff, but they got to know me because of that. You know, I sat and asked questions. If anybody needed anything, I was always the first one to run and get it for them. You know what I mean? Just paying my dues, even though I wasn't even a part of it. You know, I was making myself a part of it already. And, we were backstage during a taping. It was me, Vince and Bubba. And we were talking about it. Vince was like quickly going through my resume or whatever. And he goes, so you have an extra spot with WWE? I go, yes, sir, I do. They invited me up to Raw and stuff. And he goes, okay, good. He goes, what if I were to tell you, you know, we could promise you a spot on or something on the next pay-per-view? And I go, and this is when Bubba looked at me and he you know, let me do my, you know, this is when I needed to step up. And I knew it. I saw it and I read it and I took control of it. And I go, well, Vince, and don't get me wrong, this might ruin every chance I have with TNA, but with all due respect, I can't get rid of an opportunity with WWE like that just for a, you know, a promise of a spot in the future. Cause I know the wrestling business, man. You know what I mean? It comes and goes. They're so busy. They got time. You know, I could get rid of a great opportunity and I could just be standing there like I was, you know, for the past 6 months beforehand. You know what I mean? So I told him that and I'm like, I took a chance, you know, and it was a good chance because he goes, he looks at Bubba and then he looks back at me. He's like, can I keep this? And I'm like, yes, sir. It's all yours. And he goes, all right, we'll be in touch. And I go, all right, and right then and there, my heart sunk, man. I'm like, I'm done. You know what I mean? Like, I went on a limb, I tried, and I failed. Well, I got a phone call about a week or two later, and Bubba's like, hey, man, what would you say if I were to tell you you have a 2-year contract, wait with your name on it with TNA? I go, where do I sign? And he goes, well, get your ass down here, you have a contract. So, I mean, that's kind of how it kind of, not word for word, but that's kind of how it went right there. And I was glad, you know, Bubba was the one to tell me, you know what I mean? Cause he was the one that like took me under his wing every day, you know, my first full year and a half, you know, of just training. And it was an honor, man. I thought I failed, you know, and that's the ups and downs of wrestling, you know, that people don't see, you know, and I felt it right away at the beginning, you know what I mean? So, but you know, my work ethic, my respect for the boys, my respect for the business that I wasn't even in yet, you know what I mean? It showed and it proved myself, you know, just to get my foot in the door. And, you know, I had my big toe in the door at TNA at that time. So I knew I had a lot on my plate. I had a lot to prove. And, you know, I went in there and I held my breath. You know what I mean? I'm like, let's do this, man. It's time to live my dream. And, you know, the rest is history.
How did you feel, you know, going down there to sign that contract? Did you feel like I finally did it?
I'll tell you what. I mean, I knew it was already a 2-year contract. My name was on it. It was already set. But I'll tell you, my asshole was puckered so tight, man, a dime couldn't even fit in that. Like, it was insane, man. Like, for one, I was truly honored, man. And, you know, a lot of people just throw that shit around, but I really feel that I have, you know, a commitment in my life and a big reason why I started pro wrestling. And when I signed that contract, that was telling me right there that hard work does pay off. And I got a lot more hard work to do and it kind of motivated me even more. But that day when I signed it, man, I was humbled, man. I was honored. I was humbled. And you know, that was my first big lesson in the wrestling business. Like hard work really does pay off and stuff like that. You know, I mean, honestly, sometimes it doesn't. I'm busting my ass even more than I ever have now. I don't have a job. I don't have a 6-figure job. I don't have, you know, I'm not on TV anymore, but I'm busting my ass on the indies and I'm having fun. That's the thing about it. Like, would I turn down a job? Hell no. Of course I would go right back to TV if I could. But I'm just having fun, man. I have a personal life. I have, you know, I have a regular job, you know what I mean? And, you know, I have regular friends. But I still do wrestling every now and then, you know, on the weekends. And I'm having fun. I give back to the wrestling business, obviously, because like I always said, the wrestling business don't owe us anything. It's the wrestlers and the fans that keep the wrestling business alive. We don't have big time corporations that, you know, outside big time corporations that fund us and keep us running. No, these are indies. Like these are regular Joes that are running these shows that have the love for the business that keep it alive and do their own shows. So we as wrestlers need to have respect for that and do the same. You know, so I still give 110% or 100%. I don't like when people say 110%. It's so weird. But anyways, like how can you give 110%? I don't get it. But, you know, there's this one show in Cocoa, Florida. That I was there at the first show last year. I broke my ankle. I was out. I broke both my bones. I tore all my ligaments. They said they exploded. They had a few doctors in there to do reconstructive surgery on my ankle. I was done. Like I literally laid there for a month in bed and I was done, man. There was a lot of stuff happening in my personal life at that time. That was not good, you know, and then there goes the only thing I had a hold of and I loved was gone. And I laid there in tears, man. Every single night, every single day, I laid there in tears. But you know what got me out of that bed and back in the gym? And I had a cast. I went to the gym every single day, sometimes twice a day on crutches. You know what I mean? Every single day. And that's rough, man. working out and trying to stay in shape and do that stuff. And, you know, I came back within 3 months to that same company in Cocoa. They had faith in me. They had trust in me. It's called AWE. And I'm the heavyweight champion right now. But they showed me love. You know what I mean? When nobody else would. Nobody else, they were like, oh, Jesse, he's done. He's done finally. You know what I mean? That type of thing. And I mean, there's a couple other shows too out there that showed me love too, but it's like, it scared me. You know what I mean? Cause it's like, all right, this is reality. I'm getting older now. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like, and now I have a serious injury. But I didn't let it stop me. I mean, you come to my shows now, it's like I never was injured. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Some people are gone 6 to 8 months with a broken ankle like I had, but I was literally gone 3 months and I was right back in the ring. I mean, hell, I was back in the ring 2 months with a medical boot on me, just building up storylines for when I come back. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, I do have the heart, and people have saw that in Coco, and I have a lot of respect for that company and the fans out there in Coco. Cause there's nothing like the Florida fans, man. I'm telling you that right now. Like, they've seen me grow up in this business all 10 years. And there's just so much love for me on these shows. It's amazing. And I'm like actually one of the agents there. Me and Wes Briscoe are agents on the show. Cause we want to give back. We want to make the shows better for the fans, but we want to make the wrestlers better for the shows and the shows better for the wrestlers. Like, that's the key too. Like, I want to give back to the wrestling. Like I always say, you know, the wrestling business don't owe me anything. You know, they gave me a platform to do my thing, to say my piece, to live my life. You know what I mean? To live my dream. And I want to give back to it every chance I get. So I definitely dedicate, you know, myself to this company 100% out there in Coco. It's just that's real love for the business, you know?
That is, Jesse. That really is. And you know what? That whole piece of the story that you just talked about, that's really inspiring. And I think a lot of wrestlers should take notes from you, you know, if they ever feel like they're down and out. You just gotta keep going.
Yeah, see, that's a great thing too, that you said that. Like, I see stuff on Facebook, so much negative crap. That's why I hate social media. I really do, because I think it's just a platform to generate hate and negativity. But that's fine. I mean, the world's corrupt anyways. It's an evil planet, you know, I mean, especially in this country that everybody wants everything handed to them and they just want to, I woke up today, it's just going to be one of those bad days. You know, I just don't feel like breathing anymore. Well, then don't. Like, you have that choice. You're a human being, but there's so much more to life than just sitting there complaining about stuff. Like, and don't get me wrong. I'm human, man. Like, when I broke my ankle, I laid there in bed just like, what am I doing? You know, what am I doing? I've lost everything. Everything. And I've had to build back my life 3 different times since I've been in the wrestling business that people don't know about. I'm talking about relationship wise. I'm talking about living situation wise. And then you have these marks that want to make fun of that. Like, really? Mm. Like, we have lives too. We have families too. And you know what? It's not all glitz and glamour like you see on TV, because not all of us are on TV. You know, we're not making the big paychecks, but we have the love for the business. We still have the respect for the business and the real fans of wrestling. And I mean, there's just too much negativity about it. And like, I see a lot of new guys that come to this AWE show, and I mean, you know, I keep bringing that up because that's one of my, one of the companies I really put my heart and soul into, you know, and I see new guys and they ask questions, and I love that because I want to teach them. I want them, cause I'm not doing this forever. Hell no. I don't want to fucking do this shit. You know what I mean? I can't. I mean, I would love to. I would love to do it 200 more years, but I physically can't do it. You know what I mean? I mean, now, thankfully, I'm 37 years old and it's like I'm 19 again. Like, I could still do anything. I do stuff in that ring that amazes me sometimes. Like, I can't believe I just did that, but I'm back there sitting there in pain because I did it. And I'm like, wow, how did I do that? You know what I mean? It's just like, I turn it on when I'm out there still. And I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful to have the body and have the athletic ability to still do that. So that way I can help new kids come in the business and show them that, you know what? There is still respect in this business. There is still great fans here. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that's what I do. I love doing that stuff.
Oh yeah. You know what? I think you definitely have, the right attitude. I gotta say, out of all the people I've interviewed, because I've interviewed, you know, a lot of different people over time, and I gotta say, as far as wrestlers, you've got one of the best mindsets as far as an in-ring wrestler that I've heard.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, like I said, I learned a lot from Bubba, you know, and everybody knows what he's been through and what he's done for this business and what he's been through in this business, you know, publicly and stuff. And it's like, you know, I learned a lot from him, you know, I learned a lot of the respect and, you know, the, just that kind of aspect of things. And I throw myself into it, you know, and obviously, you know, cause I went through the military and stuff and I learned a lot of commitment there. And, you know, I found myself, you know what I mean? Especially after the Cole bombing, I truly found myself. And I was lost for a little bit. You know, I am human. You know, I didn't know, you know, why I'm here on this planet still. I felt like I died there. And I did. A part of me did die out there. But you know what? My best friend and 16 other of my shipmates died out there. You know, and I have to live for them. You know what I mean? I want to live on for them. And people need to know that, you know, and they need to see what, you know, men and women truly, and I said men and women, not all this other crap that people say they are. I don't, it's so stupid nowadays, but, they need to see that. You know what I mean? They need to see that, you know, it's not free. Like I'm not talking about freedom. I'm not talking about this or that. I'm talking about what we still live through today. It's been, I got out of the military in 2002. I mean, it's 2018 for crying out loud. I mean, that shows you how old I am. You know what I mean? It's like, but I'm still like that. Like I, and trust me, man, I beat myself up all the time. Why do I feel this way? Why do I say the shit I say? I should just move on and tell people to fuck off or something. You know what I mean? But I mean, some people I do say that too, cause I don't hold my tongue anymore. I don't care. But you know, people need to see that, you know, this is our country, man. This is our world, not just a country. This is our world, man. This is our air that we're breathing. This is our life. This life that we're on this planet for is a second, man. It's a blip in the grand scheme of things. And people need to realize that too. So that's another thing. Like I still stay in the business too, cause this is like my only really thing to be able to speak. This is my platform. You know what I mean? To speak out and tell people, you know, open your eyes, man. See what you truly have. Because if you think you have nothing, look around. You have everything. Just because you don't have any money, just because you don't have shiny things, just because you don't have the shit they propaganda on TV and stuff that you need to have. Man, you're rich, man. You have life. You have breath in you. You know, you're walking, you're talking, you're, you know, whatever you're doing, you know what I mean? You have an ability to do whatever you want to do. You know what I mean? Like people need to seriously see that stuff. And that's what I do. Like, and I get it all the time. Dude, why do you still do this to yourself? Because I have that right. I have that choice. And I prove that every time I'm in the ring.
Yeah. And you know what? Not only why are you still doing it to yourself, you know, another thing is it's because it's what you love. I mean, you live for it. You breathe for it. You know, I really look at wrestling, wrestling a lot of times. I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but a lot of times I think of the wrestling business as a dignified lady. Like I always call wrestling a her sometimes.
Yes. Oh yeah. I mean, we're married to it, man. We are. Whether it's like we talked about before, whether you're in the ring or you're doing a podcast for wrestling, you're married to it, man. That's your woman, man. That's your man. That's your relationship, whatever you believe in, whatever you are. You know, this is our life. You know what I mean?
And you know what? Wrestling always, you know, by your sacrifices, I don't know how other wrestlers feel. You know, if there's some wrestlers that, if there's some wrestlers, you know, back there that feel that they're doing it for nothing, like, oh, I'm not getting anywhere, you know, I'm not really getting nothing out of this. You know, I don't know how those wrestlers would feel to this, but wrestlers like you, you know, that sacrifice and go in there night in and night out. I want you to know that your sacrifices, at least for a fan like me, I can't speak for anybody else, but at least for a fan like me, the sacrifices that that wrestlers like you give, you know, just so a fan like me. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I like things pop in my head and I got to get it out before I like forget it because you know too many concussions. But but like what you just said, you're hitting on so many things that are bringing stories up in my head that I haven't thought about in a long time. Like you're just saying about how it doesn't matter, like you know, how many people, like for me, it don't matter how many people in the crowd. One time in Melbourne, we did a show. It was me and Bordell Walker. And there was They just changed the venue the day before. There was something that happened with the building. It was a disaster. We all show up and literally there's maybe 10 or 12 people in the crowd. And like, this is, I think I was with TNA at the time. I was with TNA at the time or right after, something like that. I forget. But, I didn't have to. Bordell didn't have to. And we had a ladder match and there was only 10 people in the crowd. Okay. Now we went out there and we acted like there was 10,000 people in the crowd. And you know what we did that day, okay, is still talked about in locker rooms today.
Wow.
So for people that think, and like you're talking about, for people that think that they're just going to a show and they're just like, yeah, whatever, it's just another show, nobody cares. Yes, they do. People are always watching. People are always listening. You know what I mean? It's like everybody out there is like a sponge. The fans remember. The boys especially remember. Like that show, I called all the boys into the locker room because, showtime started. No show yet. Promoter was freaking out. I called all the boys in there. You know what I mean? Cause me and Bordell were like we're the vets or whatever. And we called everybody in the locker room. Some people left, you know, some wrestlers left. And I told them straight up, look guys, we have a show to put on. There's no money. There's only 10 people out there, but I was taught, and I know a lot of, cause some of those guys were team 3D guys. And I'm like, some of you guys were taught the same way, that it don't matter how many people are in the crowd. This is what we love to do no matter what. And I told them, I'm like, you can leave now. No harm, no bad, no ill will or anything like that to you. You leave now. That's your own decision. You don't want to put your body on the line for no money. I don't blame you. You have to leave now because we have to put a show together. And me and Bordell, man, we put that show together and all the boys that stayed, I have so much respect for every single one of them that stayed during that show and they all know who they are. The fans know who they are. All 10 or 12 people know who they are and that was sitting in the stands. And we put on one hell of a show, man. Like there was bruises all over my back from that ladder. And me and Bordell just went out there and we killed it, man. The whole show, every single person that was a part of that show killed it and they still talk about that today. Now that right there means something. And I'm telling you, I've been all over this country wrestling. I've been all over Canada wrestling and that show right there sticks out to me. You know what I mean? That show in front of 10 people. I've been in front of 10 people. I've been in front of over 10,000 people and that show sticks out more than me than over 10,000 people does.
Oh, you know what? And I'm sure all the 10 people that were there, they were probably real hardcore fans that really appreciated it. And
yeah, actually, one of my really good friends today, he was in that crowd, and I didn't really even know who he was at that time. And me and him are really good friends now. You know what I mean? I mean, he runs his own little wrestling souvenir type stuff, memorabilia and stuff like that. I think it's like Backlund Warehouse. And he comes to the Coco Show all the time. He sets up his gear all the time. And you know what? He's one of my good friends. I even call him family. You know what I mean? He's one of my brothers. You know what I'm saying? So, and for something like that to come out of that, that'll live with me forever. You know what I mean? Something simple and little that some of these new wrestlers think that it would be nothing and it's a waste of time. It actually is something. You never know what it could turn into. You know what I mean?
Hey, you know what? Exactly. That's like fans like me. You know, for me, when I sit there and I watch performers, you know, put their body on the line. You know, I don't expect to see, you know, like how these fans, some of them are just bloodthirsty. You know, they want to see more extreme. They want to see more of this, more of that. I'm the type of person when I'm sitting there watching, I'm amazed by the art and I can't help but say, wow, guys, thank you. This is awesome. You know, like you're giving me some really damn good memories. Cause you know, like for me, when I'm down and out and I'm depressed, the first thing I turn to is wrestling. Wrestling is what pulls me out of whatever I'm going through. Yeah. And you know what? From wrestler sacrifices such as yourself, it's helped me through a lot of stuff in my life.
That's awesome. I'm honored.
So, you know, what you do and, you know, other wrestlers that you know that do stuff, you know, the same thing you do. And it really helps me. It helps a fan like me tremendously, you know, just to get through something bad, you know, just to.
Yeah, I mean, all these new guys too, you know, and I talk to new guys literally every single show I go to. And I make an effort to do that because of this reason, what we're talking about right now, because it don't matter how small it is. You can always change somebody's life. you can always change your own life, because you're going to come to a point in your life, like we were just talking about, that you're going to look back on something. You're going to need that memory to move on, to keep going. Like, I don't know how many times I was laying in bed with my broken ankle in dire pain 24/7 the whole time I was healing. And I mean, it's still healing almost a year later. It's still healing. You know what I mean? But it took me, you know, all the things and all that fun I had with the boys and the interactions with the fans to keep me going, actually make me, because even the doctor looked at me, he goes, man, if you break that again, I'm not going to work on you. Like, I'm not going to work on you again, because I told you that you're 37 years old. You don't need to be doing this anymore. Why are you doing this anymore? And I told him, and he looked at me and he's like, I understand now. You know, it's those moments that got me through stuff like that to keep me going, to keep me doing it.
Yeah. Jesse, I'll tell you, this is one of my favorite interviews I've ever done, really, because we're really getting into the heart of the matter of things. And
yeah, and that's the thing too, is that it's never talked enough about. Like, either you think that, you know, wrestlers are too emotional or too weak about it. No, it needs to be talked about. These new guys, these old guys, these current guys, they need to hear stuff like that, because there's guys out there that are taking things for granted. And every single second in the wrestling business, you can't, man, because it'll be gone in a heartbeat. Trust me, I know all about that.
Oh, you know what? It's like you said earlier, we're on this planet for just like one little blip of time. And yep, that's really what it is. Like, the older I'm getting, my life is moving by so fast. It's like I was 21 yesterday and now I'm going to be 30 next month.
Yep. And oh, it gets faster. Don't worry.
Oh, thanks. I'm comforted now.
Yeah, I don't even remember my 30s, really, to be honest with you. I don't.
Oh, man. It's like, where's it going? It's like sometimes I'm like, slow down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just keeps getting faster and faster.
So that's what I try to do. You know, I try. And it's like certain things with me being a fan. I've had a lot of, you know, just a lot of fans, you know, like people that even go to wrestling shows, just random people that I make conversation with. Yeah. Or, you know, some of my friends that I know, you know, people will look at me because I try to go to WrestleMania every year.
Yeah.
And now I'm going on the Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager cruise in October. Oh,
nice. I heard about that, man. That should be a lot of fun.
Man, it's going to be something. I know they're taking off from Miami and they're going to Nassau, Bahamas and back to Miami.
Man, that's great.
And everybody always asks me, why are you spending your money and wasting your money just to make these billion-dollar companies richer? You're making these rich people richer. They're like, for what? Yeah. And my answer always is, well, this is what I love. You know, I can't help it. This is part of me. This is what I love. And it's not like I'm going to be here forever.
Yeah, I mean, it all down to money comes and goes, but memories, they last forever, man.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, you could go at any time. So it's like, you know what? Enjoy while you're here.
Yeah, I want to be on my deathbed with a smile, sitting there saying I did what I wanted to do. I lived my life. Now it's time to move on. You know what I mean? I don't want to be sitting there crying and like, I can't believe I'm dying and panicking. I'm not afraid of death. I've stared death in the face plenty of times, as you know, a lot of people know me. They know that, you know, a couple different times I've almost passed on and stuff like that. Mm. But, you know, I want to lay there, and if it's quick, then so be it. I want to have that in my mind that, you know what? I lived my life. You know, I lived, you know, every second I could or tried. You know what I mean? At least gave a shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I'm just thinking, Jesse, because I'm thinking of what we touched on. You know, I'm kind of backtracking a little bit to think of what we touched on.
I go on tangents all the time.
Hey, you know what? That's fine, man. I don't care, you know, how long we're here, because I tell all my guests that come on here, my name might be on this show. It might be called the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling podcast, but when I have a guest on, it's not my show anymore. It's theirs. Like, this show is the Jesse Neal podcast.
Nice.
That's how I look at it, because that's like my way of giving back. I don't care if my name's on the show. When a guest is on, it's not my show. It's theirs.
Yeah. No, and that's good. That's a great way to think about it.
That's where I wanted to stand out, you know, from everyone else. Like everyone else that has a podcast, you know, it's their show. The person comes on, answers their questions, and it's done. But what about maybe things, you know, that your guest wants to talk about? What if they want have something that they really want to get off their chest to everybody? Well, that's where I come in. I want to be that, I want to be that different podcaster. Like when someone comes on, I want them to feel like they're sitting down with the best friend of 20 years that they haven't seen in a while. And they're just having a conversation. That's what I always pride myself on when I do this.
So, no, that's good. You're giving people like me a platform. You know what I mean? And that's really good because, you know, wrestlers, they need a platform to speak. You know, they need to, should I say they need a platform to freely speak their mind? Cause I know a lot of guys and girls out there that, you know, that still have that dream, still want to get that contract. So they got to watch what they say. And don't get me wrong. You know, I still want that contract. I still have that dream, you know, to be in front of thousands and, you know, be on that main stage of WWE and stuff like that. But I'm not going to sit back and like be scared and be scared of what I say. I'm not disrespectful in what's in any kind of way. I do have an opinion and it's a very strong opinion, but everybody else has an opinion also. So I look at it that way. You know, people shouldn't be scared to say a certain thing. You know, as long as you believe it, there, you know, that's why we do live in America. So you can say how you feel and stuff like that. You shouldn't be afraid no matter like, oh, I'm afraid to get this job or that. No, you shouldn't be afraid. You should be, I mean, look at the people that have made millions in this business alone. Did they watch what they said? No, they didn't.
Oh, exactly. You know what? There's some of the guys and girls, you know, that are in the business that don't even want to come on, you know, podcast. And I understand why some of them don't because you have some of these guys, either they'll grill you, you know, and keep asking like this question, like really trying to pound it, almost like an interrogation type deal. And then you have the ones that, you know, they care about the fame and fortune that they'll just, you know, send it off to a dirt sheet. Like, oh, listen here, I just had an interview with blah, blah, blah. They said this. It's like, no.
Yeah.
Why? See, like with me, I record the podcast. What does it do? It goes up on a YouTube live stream and it goes up on iTunes. That's it. Yeah. I don't do any funny business with my stuff. I never have. I never will. Because why? Because I have respect. I have respect for who comes on. I have respect for the business. And I just don't understand these other people that do the things they do. It blows my mind, man. Blows my mind.
Yeah, I agree 100% there.
I'm thinking right now, we touched a little bit on your TNA stuff, like when you got signed in your first match with Matt Morgan and, you know, what led you to, you know, pretty much walk out that you weren't really loving it anymore.
Yeah.
I want to talk about what led, you know, to that ending in TNA. And actually, I'd like to start from, you know, after you had your match with Matt Morgan and you started getting rolling there in TNA, what were some of the greatest moments that you had in TNA? Any memorable feuds, you know, any highlights, you know, from TNA that you'd like to speak about while you were there?
The biggest thing I took from TNA was the roster. Those guys, like I was a nobody in the business when I showed up there, man. And it was like a family. Those guys were amazing. Like, some of the names that come to mind, obviously Kurt Angle was one of the first, you know, AJ Styles, like him, Christopher Daniel, Kazarian. Those guys worked with me in the ring, you know what I mean? Like even before shows and stuff like that, I picked their brain. They were never hesitant to talk. Man, those guys are amazing. I mean, I love that, you know, what they're doing still today in this business. You know, they deserve the best. You know, they are wrestling. You know what I'm saying? So I love to see what they're doing and stuff. And I still remember that. You know, I take that to heart and I truly respect those guys. So you got that. And like after, you know, this whole ordeal of me pretending not to wrestle or know how to wrestle and stuff, which was very hard, you know, to do, but you know, it's all about storyline and stuff. And, you know, once we got up that of Jesse Neal getting his ass whooped, I think it went way too far, but you know, that's just me, you know, going by the script and doing what I was told to do, which that's what you're supposed to do when you first start. And, So we finally get into the Mohawk thing. I come out with Bubba and Devon and Rhino, which was a true honor, man, just to come out with my trainers. And then Rhino, like, are you kidding me? What they've done for this business. And I love that style of wrestling anyways. So it was a true honor just to be by their sides out there on TV, you know. And then we started this, was it South Philly Wrecking Crew? Like, it was amazing. The thing, the direction that Bubba had with it. It was all the promos and like the storyline, and it was only for a short while, because then when Hogan came in, which was good for TNA at the beginning and stuff like that or whatever, because it brought ratings, it brought more eyes to TNA, which was a good thing. He ended a lot of storylines, which, you know, that's the part of the business I don't agree with, but the reason being is because I don't know that side of the business, because I'm never in the office. I don't know what goes on in those doors. And I honestly don't want to know, to be honest with you. You know what I mean? Especially at that point in my career, you know? So that was my first taste of like, all right, boy, you're going to sit down and shut up now. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to disappear off TV. And it didn't matter how hard, and I'll tell you, I don't care what people like or not like, I worked my ass off to get there. I worked my ass off for that spot that I was at that moment. But you know what? That's the wrestling business. It has its eyes and it flows. No matter how hard you work, and sometimes it's gone. That's why I always say you got to take full advantage of every second you have out there. So, and I did. And so they took me off TV for a couple of months. And then, Shannon Moore came in with the whole Hogan regime and stuff like that. And as soon as they drove up in that Lamborghini, as soon as Jeff and, Shannon drove up, I'm like, oh fuck, there goes my career. You know what I mean? Mm. I'm going to have to get the head and get a different look or something. Tattoos and Mohawks, I'm done. But thankfully Shannon came in the company, wanting to work with the company, wanting to help the company, wanting to grow with the company. And he saw me right at the get go, you know, this new guy out of nowhere, but has a lot of heart and wants to give everything to the business. Thankfully we sat down and talked for a while, man, that first set of taping he was at. And I got to give it up to him. He has a lot of my respect, and he took me under his wing, you know, and started, you know, not as the new wrestler anymore, but as a TV wrestler now. He showed me a lot of TV stuff. We come up with Ink Inc. We come up with everything to do with Ink Inc. That have been the downfall of Ink Inc. probably, but you know, we gained a lot of fans right away off the bat. You know, the fans just generally loved us. For one, Shannon and his career, you know, he brought a lot of his fans to him. So I appreciate all that, that attention that I got from that alone. And just being on the road with him on the house shows were amazing. Like, they were so much fun in and out of the ring. Like, I mean, I wasn't getting paid that much because I was a new guy. You know what I mean? And, we roomed together. We ate together. We drove together. You know what I mean? It was a great. He's a brother of mine, you know, and I can say that he is family, and I'll always consider that. No matter what's going on in personal life or wrestling wise, he'll always be there for me, you know, as a brother to me, because, you know, he did that for me, and he didn't have to. Nobody told him to. He wanted to. You know what I'm saying? So Ink Inc. was alive and well, and we were having great matches with, you know, the Young Bucks, you know, and young, or the Generation Me at the time. That they were great to work with, you know, those kids, man, I love what they're doing in New Japan, and, I stay in contact with them every now and then, you know, once in a blue moon, but you know, they're busy as hell, which I love to see. You know what I mean? They're great guys and two great, hell of a talent. Motor Machine Guns, Beer Money, amazing matches with Beer Money. So much fun. Learned so much on the house shows. Me and Storm went out there. We had so much fun in that ring. Bobby Roode, it was amazing to learn from a guy at that stature, you know, at that stature. He just knew in and out of the business. He ate, slept, bled the business, man. And it was fun to learn from him too. Bubba and Devon, Team 3D. I couldn't even tell you how many freaking tables I've been through, you know what I mean? On house shows. And I mean, and there's things I can't, that nobody can take this away from me, no matter, you know, how bad you hate me or love me or whatever, you can't take this away from me. The feeling of walking in the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York, man, and wrestling Team 3D. And yeah, I got flipped through a table that night, but I earned a lot of respect from those ECW fans, because the night before, or was it the night after? It was one of those, it was the same house show loop, we actually got to wrestle Team 3D in the old ECW arena. Mm. Like, that's an honor, man. Like, I can't, I remember, like, this shit happened last week, man, and nobody can ever take that away from me. And I loved it, man. I can't thank them enough for one, to have the honor to share the ring with them. I can't thank enough, of the fans up there in New York and stuff like that. And to wrestle in that kind of place, man, is just, it's electrifying. It's undescribable almost. You know what I mean? And you know what? This just popped in my head too. I was backstage. Rob Van Dam was the champion of TNA champion at the time, and he was stretching and the belt was sitting there. And that was the very first time I ever touched the TNA heavyweight championship. I picked it up. I took a picture with it in the Hammerstein Ballroom, man. And memories like that kept me going, you know what I mean? Or keep me going till today. So that, you know, that was a great experience. You know, we started getting into storylines with, Mexican American and some weird topics, if you know what I'm saying. You know, like, we didn't want to race bait or anything like that, but that was kind of the story. And you know what I mean? We did have fun with Hernandez and IKEA, or, what was his name? I always messed up his name.
But, Hernandez and Homicide?
No, I wrestled Homicide too before. This was, not LAX, but, Mexican American.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And then I ended up, not a lot of people know, because when Jesse Sorensen broke his neck at that pay-per-view, it was the pay-per-view right before that. I got dumped on my head for the finish of our match with Mexican American, and I couldn't move. Mm. Like, I lost feeling in my body and stuff for a little bit. They rolled me out of the ring, and then thankfully it was like a bad stunner. And as soon as they rolled me out of the ring, I started getting feeling in my hands and my feet and stuff like that. I ended up getting a herniated disc. I was out for like 3 or 4 months. I mean, that was my big injury, first injury in the wrestling business. So that scared me, man. I was laying on my couch. The doctor literally told me, he's like, there's nothing we really can do for you right now, but lay on your couch and heal. And I'm like, I don't get paid. You know what I mean? I don't get paid to sit at home. You know what I'm saying? So I learned a different way of wrestling, with more merchandise and stuff like that to survive. And one guy that sticks out in my head in my career is Terry Taylor. He was talent relations at the time. That man has so much respect for me. He is almost like a wrestling father for me. He took care of me when, you know, I was lost. It was my very first injury, and he took care of me business wise and stuff like that through TNA and stuff. And he looked out for me when I was injured, and I came back bigger, stronger. I remember the conversation right after the day after my injury. I should have been in the emergency room, but I came to tapings anyways. Was it stupid? Yes. I shouldn't have been at tapings there because I was injured really bad. And I talked to Bubba, and Bubba told me straight up, he's like, go home, kid. He's like, go home and heal. He's like, I know what you're going through right now. Don't worry about it. He's like, go home and heal. And he's like, and you'll come back even stronger. And I took that advice. And that's all I thought about those 3 months sitting on my couch and feeling. I got back in the gym really hard, really heavy. I came back bigger, bagger, badder and stronger, you know, and it was Vince Russo as the director / producer of the segment of my return. And it was in the tattoo shop where I got all my tattoos at here in Orlando, Florida. And it was an honor, man, because it was like a lot of my ideas and stuff. And, me and Hernandez and Shannon and, Anarchia or whatever. Like, we had fun in that tattoo shop. We tore that tattoo shop apart, man. It was awesome. It was so much fun. And then we kept going with the storyline there. And I don't know where it first started hitting me, man. It's just, it was like almost the same things that we were doing. We just literally kept doing the same thing every taping, every pay-per-view and stuff. And I just felt that I could do more. I could learn more. So I went up to Bruce Pritchard and I asked him, I go, it was backstage at a live taping. And I'm like, I know you're real busy right now and stuff like that. And we already got done with our segment or whatever. And I looked at him. I'm like, I kind of feel stagnant a little bit. I want to know what I can do to be more profitable to the company. And he's like, man, that's awesome. You came to me. You know, we've been wanting to talk to you and stuff like that and see what we can do with you. Let me. And I'm like, all right, on that week. And,
told me, you know, told me some things I didn't like, but you know, that's what happens in business. They told me that there was an opportunity, they're opening up, OVW as their, training camp and all that other stuff. And I was honored, man. I was like, awesome. It's great. I can get a lot more training. I can just focus on training, still come to the tapings and all that good stuff. But the only problem was they needed me up there ASAP. Well, I lived in Florida. I had a girlfriend or a fiance at the time. I had a place, a truck, furniture, you know, all that stuff and no money. I had no money for moving. I didn't have a dime to move all my pickup and leave. And they needed me as like yesterday, they said. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't. I mean, and this is where it came in. You're 3 months late on my paycheck. If you guys paid me what you owed me, I could move up there. And, I think they owed me like $3,500 at the time or something like that. And it's like, my hands were tied. You know what I mean? He's like, well, we need you there now. And I'm like, I can't be there. And I talked to my lawyer. I talked to a few other, the boys that I trust, you know, with everything, my personal stuff and everything. And, you know, I came to the decision to ask for my release because I knew WWE was my all time end game, goal. And my all time dream is to be on that stage at WWE and it still is. You know, for, you know, my boys that passed away on the ship and stuff like that or whatever, you know, I always said I would be a WWE wrestler. You know what I mean? That's what drives me even still today. But that's kind of that moment in my apartment, man. I was just literally sitting there with the email sitting on my computer, just ready to send to Dixie and Bruce Pritchard asking for my release. I sat there, man. I really got to know who Jesse Neal really was that in that moment. You know what I mean? That moment lasted forever for me. You know, it lasted a very long time. And I said, you know what? What do I got to lose? I'm like, I'm not really doing much with TNA right now, you know, that type of thing. I talked to Shannon about it. He was pretty much done too. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to send it, you know, and I sent it. I asked for my release and honestly, man, it was very professional. They gave me my release. Everything was great at the next tapings. They gave me one more match to go out with, Gunner putting me out and Ric Flair was Gunner's manager at the time. So it was kind of an honor, even on my last match, getting beat up and taken out on a stretcher, you know what I mean? And there was one thing that really stood out to my head there. My last moment as a TNA wrestler, and I'm so honored to even say this now, that they took me out in an ambulance. Now, everybody in the back, they knew I was leaving. They knew I was gone after this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the ambulance took me away, and when they brought me back, nobody was left. Like, it was the end of tapings and stuff like that or whatever. And when the ambulance brought me back, the only person that was standing there was Ric Flair. Ric Flair stood there and waited for that ambulance to bring me back, to hug me and shake my hand and thank me for everything I've done for that company. And it was an honor to be in part of that match.
Wow. Like,
that right there will stand out in my head forever. You know, that was my last moment in TNA. And you know what? I'm honored to have that moment, you know? And that stuck with me. So I had a lot of thinking to do, man. I just walked. I had two more years on my second contract with TNA, you know, and I left. I walked out, you know, that was my decision and it was rough. It was very hard, man. I had a lot of ups and downs after that, you know, and I stuck to it, man. My training, I upped my training. I went back to the Team 3D Academy. I was going nuts there. I was doing a hell of a lot more indie shows. I was just getting a lot more experience and I'm a better wrestler before. I became a way better wrestler since TNA because of that decision and that road. Was it an easy route? No, hell no. It was probably the toughest and the most difficult path I could have took, but I did because, you know, my end game is WWE. You know, I want to make it there. You know, I always did. And ever since, I mean, I got a tryout with WWE. That was a great tryout. I was in the tryout with, Ty Dillinger, Kalisto, Bull Dempsey was there, Adam Cole was there, a lot of good wrestlers that are still there now, you know what I mean, I was there with, you know what I mean, we were top of that tryout, you know, I never got a yes or no out of that tryout, you know, that's the funny thing about it, and ever since then, I've been talking to WWE, they've always emailed me back, they've always texted me back, all that good stuff. You know what I mean? I go there, Triple H, he hugs me, hey Jesse, I'm glad to see you're here. They invited me to Tribute to the Troops. You know, it was a true honor just to be even there, a part of that, you know, backstage with all the bullies and stuff. I got to know, you know, a lot more of them. You know, I met I met Punk when he was champion there. He was very respectful. I got to talk to him for a little bit. Very down to earth dude. You know, I got to meet a lot of people there, and, mainly I got to meet a lot more of the office, you know, Stephanie, Vince McMahon, all those guys I met, you know, and it was a true honor, and it was a way different atmosphere too, you know, and I'm glad I got to experience that too. And still today, I still am called back for an extra at NXT cause I'm right here by Orlando, you know, very local and stuff. So, you know, hopefully in 2018, I get to go back, and hopefully, I mean, there's still interest. They still email me back, and it's a great rapport I still have with them, and it's a lot of fun. You know, it's just, it's fun to even still be a part of it and still be relevant, I guess you can say, in this business.
Oh, that's awesome. And you know, of course, I wish you the very best of luck in your journey going forward. And you know, I would really love to see you in that WWE ring, you know, going forward. Even in NXT, I think that would be awesome to see you there in NXT.
I'd love it. I would love it.
Going back to TNA, there was something that stood out to me with TNA, and it's when you said that they owed you $3,500. And
yeah,
you know what the amazing thing is, Jesse? Like, I've heard so many stories over the last, you know, it's been like 2 or 3 years. You know, like with TNA and money issues, not paying their guys. And yeah. I'm like, wow, the management must be really inept to not be able to pay the guys. But even back then, there was no stories in the dirt sheets, you know, back in the days, you know, when you were there about TNA having problems paying their guys. And it surprises me because when you were there, that you were actually there in TNA during their biggest rise to fame. Like,
yeah,
that's when they had Hogan there, Bischoff there. Like, yeah, you said, Flair was there managing Gunner. I mean, they had everybody there at that time. So they had to put out money. Like you said, Rob Van Dam, world champion. They had to put out money to pay all these guys, and like AJ Styles too. I mean, wow, now that I think all the talent they had, it's starting to blow me away.
Well, here's the thing with that, like, and I can only speak from experience. I don't know all the other stories. I don't know like all the hate stories and all that. I don't know any of that. I just know my own, especially when it comes to pay. And the only thing is this, like, we were getting paid through, their other company, you know, the energy company or whatever the hell it was. You know what I mean?
Dixie Carter's parents company.
Yeah, TNA was Dixie's company. You know what I'm saying? And we got, and this was my understanding, and I can speak freely about it because I really don't care and I'm not bad mouthing TNA. They gave me a platform when I was a nobody. I completely respect them in that aspect. But for like them to owe me money and stuff like that, like, I know I wasn't a big concern to them and stuff like that at that point. I wasn't a huge talent. I was mid-card best at that point. You know what I mean? So I don't blame them. You know, I was probably one of the last guys to get paid, which, you know what? That's the wrestling business. You know, I never bitched about that, but when somebody owes me money, I don't look at it as, okay, it's the wrestling business. I kiss their ass no matter what. No, you owe me money because I gave you work. You pay me. Or yep. I'm going to get pissed off, which anybody should, because that's what it breaks down to. You know what I mean? You're not going to, like, if you have a job at the local office building or wherever you work, and you work for 2 weeks and you wait for your paycheck and they go, well, we'll pay you next week. Would you put up with that? Fuck no. Nobody would.
No, nobody you'd would. Be right out the door. You'd be like, you know what? I'm going to fucking go to another job. Fuck this shit.
You're damn right. You're damn right. But I mean, yeah, we're just, because we're in the public eye, you know what I mean? We look like, oh, I was a young kid that don't know what he's doing. No, I was a fucking man. You know what I'm saying? Like, they didn't realize how old I actually really am. I'm not some teenager fresh out of, you know, out of the Navy, you know, thinking that the wrestling business owes me something. No, I never thought that one second. And everybody that knows me knows that. But when you owe somebody money, you need to pay them. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just the way it was. And you know, that, like I said, I can only speak from my experience, you know, and yeah, did TNA owe me money? Yeah, of course. But did TNA pay me? Yes, they did. Did they pay me on time? Not every time, no. But did I get all my money and stuff? Do they owe me money now? No, they don't owe me a dime. You know what I mean? They don't owe me a single dime, and they've always paid me what they owed me. Like I said, was it on time? No. Was it always on, or was it always late? No, it wasn't always late. Every now and then there'd be a late check, but you know what I'm saying? That's just the way it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Jesse, I'm thinking now we got all, I think we got all the TNA business out of the way.
Yeah.
I don't think I asked this. I remember you spoke on it earlier, but I don't think I asked. Now when you started getting burned out with TNA, like you said, because you felt stagnant, you know, you felt like you were in the same position and not going nowhere, and you asked for your release and you ended up getting your release.
Yeah.
Now, when you decided to walk away from TNA, was it just solely because of that, because you felt like you were going nowhere, or did you also feel burned out with the grind of, you know, being on the road every day, almost 365 days a year? And
I actually felt at home doing that. And it's weird to say that because you're on the road and stuff, but I've always been flying in and out. I was literally flying in and out of Orlando International almost every weekend or every other weekend. Like, it was fun for me with all the people that I was meeting. I never got burnt out because of that. I never, you know what I mean, got tired of it. Of course, did I have times where I was basically sleepwalking in and out of airports? Yeah, of course. But you know what? That's why I worked so hard to get to. You know what I'm saying? Like, I loved going to a building and just relaxing and knowing that, man, I've worked so hard to get here. Look what I'm going to be able to do tonight. You know what I'm saying? In some town, honestly, I was so tired on some towns, I wouldn't even know where I was at, like which town I was in. I was just driving the road. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There were some towns, I think in North Dakota or some shit, I didn't even know those towns existed. You know what I'm saying? But I loved it, man. I loved every second of it. The main reason why I left is because, yeah, I felt like I was just not burnt out, I guess, but more of I'm a very goal oriented person, you know, ever since the military. And when I'm not meeting my goals and I literally expunged everything I can possibly physically do, it's time to move on. You know what I mean? It felt like in that point in my career, in that point of TNA, I really couldn't go anywhere else in that company. You know what I mean? I wasn't learning anymore. And that was a big problem for me because I still want to be the best. I want to be the best. I want to be the top guy. I want to be that guy that the company puts, you know, all their weight on his shoulders, you know, that type of thing. You know, I want to still be that guy, and I know I can be that guy, but I felt like there was no more room for me to move, and I felt suffocated almost. And I knew it was time for me to move on at that time. Was it the wrong decision? I don't think so. Do I regret it? No, I don't regret any decision I really make. I just, if I do make a mistake, I always try to make it better. But could I have done better in TNA? Of course. You know what I mean? I could have always done better in TNA. But I'm actually glad I moved on at that point and started proving myself to WWE because they really didn't know who I was except what they seen on TV or whatever, or seen of me in the ring, you know, and they actually got to know who I am, and I actually really give a shit about this business, and they know that. You know what I mean? So I really felt like it was time, and I think it was a good time to leave.
Yeah, you know, when you're in a position like that, you know, you're not happy with what's going on, and especially if you really feel like you're not going to go anywhere else, like this is what it is, and you know that in your heart, you have no alternative but to walk away.
Right.
I mean, honestly, that's what it comes down to. You have no choice, no alternative. No matter how much you love that place, you know, no matter how much you love TNA, you have to walk away, especially if you're not learning anymore.
Right. I mean, I had so much respect for the boys I was still working with and so much love for them and everything, but it was just, honestly, it was really time for me to go. Like, I just felt like I was spinning wheels, man, just signing these books backstage for everybody, you know, not even for fans, just signing books. I don't even know where they're going to. You know what I mean? It was just, it felt redundant. It felt like I wasn't, you know, moving forward, you know, and I was always taught all the way from Bubba and Team 3D Academy that, you know, if you're not taking a step forward in this business every day, you need to stop and realize and take a breath and see why you're not. you know, you need to analyze that, because if you're not getting better and if you're not taking a step forward, then what are you doing? You know what I mean?
That's right. That's exactly right. Well, Jesse, now we're going to get to the fun part of the podcast, you know, since we got through the interview, you know, got through the grinding process, so to speak. Let's move on to a few fun things before we wrap it up.
Yeah, go Trump.
Yeah, exactly, man. Hey, you might laugh about this, but you know, it's funny that you say go Trump, because I'm a Trump guy myself, and yeah. I actually did a podcast. I did a podcast on election night, covering the whole election, seeing if Donald Trump is going to get voted in. I did a 6-hour podcast, and I was wearing my Trump hat while doing it too.
Yeah, but that was racist of you to do that.
Oh yeah, I'm sure people just hated it. You know what? After all the hate comments and stuff that I got, I still got like a few hundred people that listened to the damn thing.
Yeah, oh yeah, of course, man. I mean, that's the big thing too. It's so dumb. Like, I mean, honestly, I didn't vote because I don't believe in voting for the better of the worse.
Yeah.
You know what, if that makes sense. Like, for one, I'm definitely not a Hillary Clinton fan. I hate the Clintons. I hate everything she stands for. I hate it so bad with a passion. When my boat got bombed, Clinton was too busy worried about fucking his presidency and all that bullshit that he was going through, all that scandal bullshit that he was going through, you know, especially with like the Clinton Foundation and shit and all the corrupt bullshit that's going on. I can't stand it. And then Trump to come in, I'm not bad mouthing him at all. He's a freaking billionaire for a reason. He's a very intelligent person, very respectful person to meet in person, I heard. And obviously he knows what he's doing. Look at him. He's a almost a self-made man, you know, almost. I mean, he borrowed what, $1 million from his dad or something, they said.
Yeah.
And look where he turned it around. I mean, if that's not the American dream, the definition of American dream, I honestly don't know what is. He made billions because he's an intelligent businessman and he became president of the United States. So if that's not the American dream, I don't know what is. I really don't.
Oh, it is, you know, and to take it a step further with Trump, you know, yes, his dad gave him $1 million, but even his dad told him, you know, Donnie, you're crazy. Cause I watched the documentary, yeah, you know, and all this. His father's like, Donnie, you're crazy. You can't invest in, you know, the Manhattan area. Cause this is like in the 70s. He's like, that part of New York is dead. He's like,
oh, it was a shithole.
Yeah. He's like, what do you expect to do out there? He's like, but you're my son. I gotta have faith in you, so you know what, take it and do it. But he's like, I'm just telling you as your father, I wouldn't do it. And Trump did it and he rebuilt New York. Look at Manhattan.
Yeah, I mean, look at it now. It looks completely different than when he first started. And I mean, is he the whole reason? No. I mean, he's a big part of it. Yes, of course. But, I mean, he followed through with his vision. And I mean, that is the American dream. And I love. Watching all these people get all pissed off and mad and they believe anything that is told on the media today. And I'm talking about all medias, even Fox News and CNN, all that horse shit, you know, all the propaganda and all that bullshit. Like, you know what? And I'm going to say it and I don't care. Yeah. They take everything he says out of context. Should he have somebody running his social media? Probably, but in my personal opinion, we need somebody with balls that runs the country again. We need somebody like that again. Yep. You know, we don't need to be a laughing stock of the whole world. Do I think there's an above agenda over everything? Of course. I mean, there needs to be. Like I always say, there's sheeple among this country. We need the sheeple because we, the people, run this country. And they want to sit there and bitch and moan about him talking in a locker room about grabbing a girl by her pussy. Yes, every heterosexual guy has talked like that with locker room banter. But no, they want to bitch about how he's sexist because he said that. Really? Cause you know, I've never heard any girl talking about wanting to suck off a guy or touch a guy or anything like that. I never really walked through a crowd after a wrestling show and a girl smacked my ass. No, that's never happened. Bullshit. That's happened all the time. So they can't sit there and say women this, no, I'm sorry. Women are just as perverted and gross as men. Okay. They just know how to hide it better, which I give them props for that. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
It's such a joke. I laugh at this now. Like, and then like, especially the women that come out because they build off that whole, you know, sexist shit. All this, well, we need equal rights. And, you know, Obama said that, you know, what is it? 77 cents on a dollar and all this horseshit of making with men. You know, that's based on the whole aspects of jobs, you know, all across the board. Okay, so basically they're taking a person from like a male CEO of a top company making six figures and comparing it to a hairstylist that cuts hair for the shit. You know what I mean? And no, you can't do that. And I even put that up on my Facebook and I do it just to stir the pot. But I really want to hear what people's opinions are. I don't want to sit there on the fake news and listen to those opinions because that's all bullshit propaganda. You know, that's just to stir the pot and to get us divided. Like we are people busting our asses for a living to feed our families, to put a roof over our heads, to live our American life. We don't need to be divided. You know, we don't need to be fighting each other. We need to be fighting the problems at hand, you know, and they want to sit there and say that, you know, women make less bullshit because I can solve that right now. If women made extremely less than men, like they say they do, okay. Why do men still have jobs? Because any smart business person that wants to make a profit in their company, they would just hire cheaper labor to make more money. So if women was made forced to make less money than men, nothing but women would be in the workforce. No man would have a job. Because why would you hire a man that you have to pay more than a woman that you can pay less? Because it doesn't exist. It's not a real thing.
That's exactly right, Jesse.
I get so mad. There's people that stand right next to me that I work with women. They make more money than me, and they do less of a job in the same job I do. Like, we have the same job title, the same work, the same everything, and they don't do shit. But they make more money than I do.
Wow.
Like, is that fair? No, but you ain't gonna see me grabbing a fucking poster and screaming on the thing and starting fights and I'm standing in the highways and here we go. And I could talk for hours on this, man. This might turn into the longest podcast you've ever had. Okay. Sit there and stand in the middle of the fucking highways. Okay. And protesting. I'm sorry, but you would get run the fuck over if I'm trying to get to work. Well, for one, say I have my family in the car and I'm driving down the road and all of a sudden I see 20 to 30 people in hoodies and masks over their face and coming out with poster boards in the middle of the highway to stop traffic. You think I'm going to stop with the bullshit crime that's happening today? These people think they can do whatever the fuck they want to do? Not in my car, they're not, because I would literally kill people with my bare hands. I would not give a shit. I would protect my family over that. Because that looks like they're trying to do something. They're trying to start shit. They're trying to break into your car. There's guys that run up on cars at stoplights and start like literally sitting on hoods and they're saying they're protesting. No, they're not. Yes, we are allowed to protest. That's why I served in the country or in the military. Because for our right to protest, yes, I agree 1,000% for that. But there's a time and place for that. And then people want to bitch about that. Well, that's not about protesting. You need to do it on uncomfortable times. Yeah, but not in the fucking highways where you're making other people late for their jobs, endangering their families, okay? You can't do that with other Americans. You can't sit there and say, well, I have rights, but you're taking rights from other Americans. That makes no sense. That's part of the problem. That's not fixing problems. That's part of the fucking problem. And I would be happy to hit my gas pedal, not my brake pedal.
And, you know, not only that, it's also when these protests escalate to riots. You know, they start burning down their own town.
Yes. That's another thing I don't understand. Like, you're literally supposed to be sticking up for the common man, but how about that mom and pop shops that busted their asses all their life to live that American dream, to have their own business, but you're sitting there breaking their windows and setting the place on fire and stealing, but no, you're protesting. It's all bullshit. I mean, come on, really. Like, honestly, like, anybody that sits there and says, we're making a difference, we're protesting, literally, you could sit there and fucking have a serious face on, and you're telling me that you're protesting. No, you're not. You're damaging stuff. You're breaking stuff that people work their ass off for. Bank of America's or Chase Manhattan's or, you know, like, big-time corporations and shit, and then do that shit? Yes, for one, you should still be arrested because that's vandalism and violence. You shouldn't be doing that shit because you didn't earn that, and half of them don't even have fucking jobs in America. So it's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you're just being kids again. You're anarchists. That's all you're doing. You don't believe in American dreams because you're crushing people's dreams. People have to work. People have to pay bills, and 9 times out of 10, those protesters that sit out there for days at a time, they don't even have jobs. Of course they want a socialist government, because they want other people's taxpaying money. They are on welfare. Don't get me wrong, I know the little pussies are going to fucking sit there and cry and whine and say, real people need welfare. Yes, those programs are for people that really, truly need it. I'm 100% agreeing with that. But then there's other people, the majority, that take advantage of this shit, that don't want to work, that have 20 fucking kids, yep, that expect everybody else to pay for them. It's ridiculous. Like, I mean, come on. We need to stop looking at, oh, Democrat, Republican, liberals, or conservatives, or whatever. We need to stop dividing ourselves. We need to live life. Like, these certain things they're doing, like, on these college campuses. Oh my God. I can't talk about it enough. These little spoiled fucks, and I mean that with every ounce of my breath in my body, they're so spoiled, they don't even know what real life is about. And they're sitting there protesting, or like you said, and I say, they're rioting on these college campuses talking about white privilege. There's white people out there talking about white privilege and shit. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm sorry that slavery happened. I'm sorry that there's, you know, really, you know, have an education that you're getting that you're supposedly protesting about. That makes no sense. They're sitting up, one college campus, they kidnapped an administrator. They held him captive in one of the buildings and had demands. Did any one of them go to jail for kidnapping or false imprisonment or any of that? No, not a single one of them. But if you or I were to do that, we'd be in jail for the rest of our lives, and they'd throw away the key. Is that right?
It's not. It's not.
They'll be the first ones to sit there and tell you that, oh, this is our First Amendment, Second Amendment, all this horse shit. This is my right as an American to do. Motherfucker, you're a disgrace as an American. You'd be on the first boat out of here. You can call me whatever you want. I love it. I don't care. But for you to take away somebody else's rights like they did, they held that person captive. They kidnapped them. And that's okay? You're supposedly trying to stick up for American rights and, you know, we the people and all that shit. What about that person's rights? What about that person's family that was deathly afraid of that person never coming home again? Like, whatever happened to that? Nobody talked about that shit. They just want to talk about, well, you know, these kids, they're pretty upset that, they're pretty scared that there's 2 white people or 3 white people in their classroom. Well, I'm sorry, but you guys are sitting there saying you want to stop this racism shit. But just because you're sitting there saying that you're afraid because there's white people, like, there's, one part of, Black Lives Matter. Remember the college campus? I seen it the other day. They literally protested saying they want segregation, but they're against racism. See, that right there makes no sense. That they don't want to be in classrooms with white people.
Wow.
Like, are we seriously doing this? Are we really going back in time? They said this from the beginning of, I can't remember when, that we have to learn from our history. We have to learn from our mistakes. Not mine and yours, because I really don't know how old you are, but I'm pretty sure that you weren't here when there were slave owners. I'm pretty sure none of us were alive then, because it was that long ago. But you can't sit there and tell me that Black Lives Matter is going to sit there and demand reparations from me. I need to work and I need to give my full paycheck to a black family. I need to give my home to a black family. Give me a fucking break, man. How about working just like I do? How about that? Because I've never owned a slave. I've never whipped somebody outside of having sex with a female. Okay. I mean, that's honest truth. Like, are you kidding me? I've never put anybody in shackles. I've never called a black person boy. I've never used the N-word in a derogatory way. I don't give a fuck what people think. And they're like, oh, you got white privilege. Really? I've worked my ass off since I was 11 years old. I show jewelry in an auction at 11 years old on a Friday night every week to earn $5. And I've had a job ever since then. So for you to tell me that I have white privilege and I am spoiled and had everything handed to me, fuck no. I've lived in a vehicle before. Okay. I've had to in wrestling. I was on TV and I've worked my ass off. I've lost everything 3 different times in my wrestling career. Just 10 years, the past 10 years, I've lost everything because it wasn't because of wrestling. Yeah. Because I dedicated everything to wrestling, but I've lost that. Where's my white privilege? But since I'm a white male, as you say, you know, as you put on me that I'm a white male and I have all this privilege and I make more money and all this, where I would like to see where the fuck that is.
Yep.
And I got that's all they do. That's all they just talk out of their ass. That's all that's going on. And that's sad.
Because, yeah.
And that's another thing with Trump is that they don't even look at what he's doing for our country. I mean, obviously, just because you're president don't mean you run the country. That's a false thing that people believe for some reason. I mean, I don't care who the president is, Trump, Obama, Bush, fucking idiot, but whatever. Like, it doesn't matter who's running or is president. They're not single fucking out running the country. They're not. We have Congress. We have a democracy. We have an electoral. Like, we elect these people. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It is America. And then everybody cries about, like, oh, other countries, this and that. They go to them fucking countries. Oh, wait, that's right, because they'll put you in prison because if you're there without a work visa or if you don't become a citizen there and go through their routes, every single country, they will put you in prison and send your ass packing back to America. But no, let's be Americans and have open borders and our open arms and love everybody. Well, I want those people that say that to live next to an illegal immigrant that has been accused of fucking or found guilty of murder. And had, like, the one illegal immigrant in California that shot that young girl in front of her father.
Yeah, Jade Steinle.
He was found innocent. Are you fucking kidding me? How about those bleeding hearts of America have that person living next to them? And then California being a sanctuary state and allowing this. Are you kidding me? You know what they're doing. They're wanting the economy to drop. They're wanting all this shit because guess what's going to happen then? Because these people, they don't have trust in the cops anymore. They've already built that up over some bullshit. And then now they're not going to have trust over the cops. And when shit really hits the fan, when they sit there with open borders and open arms and bleeding fucking hearts of America, you know what's going to happen. The economy is going to drop. The crime rate's already going up. Look at Europe right now. Europe's going fucking nuts. Sweden was beautiful. Sweden was, they didn't have much of a rape fucking, crime. I mean, yeah, of course they have rape. Rape happens everywhere, which is unfortunate, but it went up like, I think it was like fucking 75% or some crazy, crazy number. It went up. Because they're bringing all these refugees in, all these illegal immigrants in. They have open borders. Well, guess what? That's what fucking happens. I mean, nobody knows, not a lot of people know this, but the state of Illinois is about to file for bankruptcy.
Wow.
Are you kidding me? And then California goes and does this fucking bullshit about illegal immigrants. And, oh, and I know people that will listen to this, oh, Jesse Neal, now he's a fucking racist. Now he's just a hateful old bastard. No. I'm not racist at all, okay? I don't look at color. And I'm not gonna sit there and be like, my best friend's black, or I have family members. I'm not saying that shit. I don't give a fuck what color you are. An asshole is an asshole.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? I'm like, that's how I look at it. You don't have to be white, purple, green, black, whatever color you are. You're still an asshole. Like, you know, I don't understand this shit. And that's what it's gonna do, because we don't have trust in cops. We don't have trust in our system. And now our states and stuff like that are allowing all these illegal immigrants coming in, and it's going to be an overflow. It's going to be overcrowded. It's going to be, because it's already overflowed. are already overflowed. Like, and what's going to happen is martial law is going to kick in because the crime rates are already going up. And I mean, Europe, they need help bad over there. It's going nuts, but people don't want to see that because your local CNN bullshit or, you know, Fox News or whatever fucking news outlet you look at, they're not showing that shit. They're not showing what's going on. They're not hearing the testimonies of people that's been living there their entire life and how they live on the streets now because of all this shit and the crime rates going nuts and shit. They can't even walk the streets. Like, it's going to get so bad. Martial law is going to kick in, man. And oh, I know all these people are like, fuck it, man. Let's do this. You think you're going to have rights then? No.
There's going to be nothing.
It don't matter. It don't matter what platform you have. It don't matter what racist or sexist or whatever is you're going to fucking make up then and now. It don't matter what gender you identify with or whatever the fuck you think you are anymore. It doesn't matter because the government will have control then. You won't have a right. You won't have rights. You won't have amendments. You are done. They will tell you what you need to do. They will tell you when to go home. They'll have a curfew for you. You have to do what they say. And if you don't, in martial law, they'll put a bullet in between your eyes and move on.
And you know what? It's sad that it's coming to that point, Jesse, because, you know, there's people like you that actually fought for our country, that fought for our rights.
Like, yeah, I mean, you're 100% right. And, like, with the whole kneeling during the national anthem thing, I do have a problem with that.
Oh, that drives me nuts, Jesse. It drives me nuts. It enrages me.
Yep. Oh, yeah. And you know what? It's not about, and I know, oh, they're talking about, oh, it's about, you know, white cops shooting black people. Really? That is not a major fucking problem. Do we have a few cops out there that are fucking idiots and shit? Yes. My dad's been a cop over 20 fucking years and he's never gave a fuck about color. He's one of the coolest cops you'll ever fucking meet. He's one of them good old boys. You know what I mean? And he can't wait to retire and get the fuck away from the police force because it's getting so corrupt and so much bullshit. Like, these new cops come out here, they think they're so cool and stuff like that, but they're not willing to kill. Are they on high alert because of all this bullshit? Yeah, now they are. Now they are. Now, do we have a couple of races? Do we have racist cops? I'm not saying we don't. Of course. Racism is still alive because we still talk about it. Morgan Freeman said it best in one of his interviews. They asked him, what do you think about, or how do we stop racism? He says, stop talking about it.
Yep.
And then what? Oh, Oprah Winfrey comes out and says that, you know, she did an interview and says that, you know, all the people that were in that generation of the end of slavery and stuff like that, all them old people need to die off. Bitch, you just called for a genocide. Are you fucking kidding me? And you're one of them.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Like, I don't understand that either, but you know, that's all part of the program, man. That's all part of the propaganda agenda bullshit that's going on. And everybody, you know, they might hear this and be like, oh, look, Jesse's fucking nuts. He's out of his mind now. But I make sense. You know, I might not have an education at Harvard or fucking Berkeley or anything. I wouldn't want a fucking education there. I wouldn't want it if you paid me to go there because there are a bunch of fucking pussy snowflakes out there that's sitting there that are sitting in a circle singing Kumbaya talking about they deserve everything and they have rights. Motherfucker, you didn't do anything to deserve anything. You're just there breathing. That's all you are.
Yeah.
You want to sit there bitch and fucking damage shit and violence, all this and that. You are creating a country that nobody wants to live in. And then when it's too fucking late, you already made your bed and they're going to have to lay in it.
Oh, it's, you know what? Everything has just gotten so bad and so crazy. Like everything that you're saying, and trust me, Jesse, if we get to talk more, you know, you'll get to know me better as time goes along. I know we just met, we're talking for the first time, but all the sentiments you say and that you believe in is mine as well. It really
is. Well, that's the thing too, is that, like, that's why I don't, the way I talk is kind of conservative a little bit, I guess, but I don't consider myself, I don't put myself in a group like that. I put myself for the human race, not just Americans, but the human race. Like you said, you know, I fought for this country so that way we can protest and so that way we are Americans and we are still free. Yes, I did. But like you say, or like they say with the NFL and shit about them kneeling during the national anthem, that's disrespecting the flag. I don't give a fuck what anybody says.
Yep.
And then I hear about people. Like now I'm literally seeing comments, and this is part of the agenda. This is what they wanted. You're talking about thousands of rich billionaires that have planned this shit out for years, man. You know what I mean? Like, this is what it's built up to. Now people are literally sitting there saying that if you stand up and put your hand over your heart during the national anthem, that's racist. Are you fucking kidding me? Just because, and that's just because, supposedly these NFL guys that make millions in this country, okay, doing what they love to do, kneeling during the national anthem and when the flag gets raised. Are you kidding me? What does that flag stand for? What does that national anthem stand for? You know, the right to be an American, yes. But what else does that American flag stand for? You have no idea what I went through, what went through my head, and what every single man and woman goes through while they're over there fighting for a country they're not even in. They're not even getting to be free. They're away from their families. They got bullets whizzing by their fucking heads, sitting there wondering, why the fuck am I here? If I've been over there, I know how that fucking feels, and it sucks. And then to come back to a country that you just get disrespected. I'm not talking about everybody. There's a lot of love for the troops. There's a lot of love. But to come back and see these fucks, and I mean that with every breath in my fucking body, those fucks that kneel during the national anthem thinking, oh, it's my American right. Motherfucker, you don't even deserve to breathe in America. And I mean that with every ounce of blood in my body. And I don't care what kind of reparations or backlash I get because of that. I don't care. Because guess what? I'm fucking American too. I have a voice too.
One of the amendments is freedom of speech.
Yeah, but you know, if you believe certain ways that's against their fucking little whatever the hell they believe in, you know, you don't have freedom of speech. They want to silence you. They want to shut you up, which I love having debates with people. I don't sit there and argue with people because that's a waste of time.
Yep.
About like debates, like especially politics. I love debates because you know what? I've seen so many, far left people sitting there wanting to argue about stuff, but when they need to come up with facts and stuff, they really can't answer questions. There are some liberals out there that are very highly intelligent, and I love listening to them. I do, because I don't believe in all their stuff. I don't believe in all right stuff, everything they say. I don't believe in everything, so I don't put myself in a category, you know? And I love hearing, I love debating with stuff because I want to learn. And that's the whole thing about debating. That's the whole thing about freedom in America to debate, is to learn, to grow. You know, because bottom line is this, whatever you believe in, no matter what color you are, we're all human still. We're still breathing the same air. That we still bleed the same blood. Like, you know what I mean? We're all human. Like, why can't we think of that first? We all try to, you know, we all got families. We all care about our families. We all try to give the best to our kids, you know, and family. Why can't we come to an agreement on things? I really can't fathom that. And I'm sitting there talking at my job a lot with guys that come in there, and I love talking to feminists. I love that because I want to know, yes, you have the feminists. They believe in equal opportunity and stuff. I agree with you, sister. You know what I mean? Like, I'm all about that. For one, it's a law. You know what I mean? They have to hire. They can't discriminate against women. Does that mean it doesn't happen? No. I know it happens out there. I'm not stupid. But why can't we come to agreements when I sit here and say, yes, I believe in equality, but you want to sit there just because you're a feminist, you think I'm lying because I'm a man.
Yeah.
That's the definition of what you're against.
Exactly. Exactly.
Jesse. I mean, there's feminists I've talked to that I've had great conversations with. I've actually learned stuff. And that's what I want to do. I want to learn stuff. That's why we debate. So we can get our point across and they can get their point across and we can come together somehow or some way. But we can at least agree to disagree sometimes too, because that is our American right. You know, and why do we need to fight? And then you got Antifa. Like, really, guys? Like, you want to cover your face. And it reminds me, every time I see Antifa or something, it reminds me of a bunch of hillbillies that are just fucking drunk and bored. You know what I mean? They just want to start fucking fight. Like, that's so dumb. You guys don't get anything across. You don't care what anybody says. You just want to hit them with your sticks and hide behind your masks.
Yep.
Like, that's sexist. That you shouldn't even have an American right if you're like that. I mean, that makes... That does not give us a step forward. That takes us two steps back, and it's ridiculous. It's so dumb. And then, like I said, I've talked to feminists that, you know, I've learned stuff from. I've talked to leftists. I've talked to rights. You know, I've talked to all kinds of groups. And, I mean, I've talked to Black Lives Matter. And don't get me wrong. when they first started out, you know, there needs to be, racism needs to stop. But like I said, Morgan Freeman said it best. Stop talking about it. Stop making it a fucking point. We need to work together. We need to get rid of it together because it's all bullshit. I don't give a fuck what color you are, where you came from, or whatever. I have respect for you because you're a human. Why can't we just agree to that?
Exactly. It's not hard to do. You know?
And then the evidence even shows that, and they don't want to look at that. They're so angry. Like, I see these, like these protests and stuff like that. They literally want to take a day off of work or because they don't even work, and they demand stuff. Like, who are you to demand anything? Like, even, no matter what you believe in. Like, who are you to demand anything? Well, that's our American right. Well, guess what? It is. But you know what? There's a time and place for it. There's a point. There's an edge there that you don't cross. Because for one, you don't fucking contribute in America. You don't have a say-so. That's what I believe. You don't contribute. You don't have a say-so. Like, just shut the fuck up. Move to the side.
Yeah. If you're basically going to be a waste and do nothing, then exactly. Should move to the side. No doubt. Jesse, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, sitting here, and I've always felt this way about Mr. Trump, you know, President Trump. What a lot of people don't understand either, you know, like, they get pissed off by him, you know, what he does on Twitter or certain things he says in his speeches, you know?
Yeah.
But, this is one thing I knew, you know, as soon as he announced his presidency, I'm like, this guy works, he's friends with Vince, he's been a part of WWE before. I'm like, this guy is gonna know how to work it perfectly to ruffle feathers and also win over the people to get votes because he's very intelligent. And I look at Donald Trump's presidency as him almost being a wrestler to get over. It's like his speeches are almost like wrestling promos. It's
promos, man. Yes. I mean, that's, and you brought up a very, very valid point. And you're looking at this and you're opening up a door that nobody's really even talked about or pretty much seen. Because Trump, yes, he was a part of WrestleMania and wrestling, yes. And now you could put together, well, you know, their presidency, their speeches really sound like promos. Well, look at Obama. He was a very great mic guy. He was very good at promos. Very good. Now Bush, the kid, he's an idiot. Like, he was very bad at speech. But he played that role. That was his character. I'm telling you, this whole presidency and politics, that, you can relate that with wrestling. You can relate anything to wrestling, to be honest with you. Like, yeah. it's ridiculous. And people don't see for what it really is. Because right now, like, everybody just thought Americans was a bunch of pussies. But now we got Trump. He basically brought the balls back and jobs, but nobody wants to look at that. You know, they're just too busy, like you said, they're too busy bitching about what he writes on social media. I mean, honestly, he is president, so he should kind of watch what he says, but he does have that right to say whatever he wants, though. You know what I mean? Like, he does. And he doesn't give a shit. That's what I love about it. He doesn't sit there and be, I wonder what the polls are saying, or I wonder what my ratings are. Who gives a fuck? I'm president. I'm gonna run this shit.
Yeah, he don't care. It's like, all right, this is Donald Trump. He's focusing on making the world better and putting laws into place, passing this. Here's the everyday, probably good part of the American population now. Oh, here's my phone. Let me take a look at it. Oh, Donald Trump tweeted this. How dare he? Oh. Pretty soon, Donald Trump's going to go up on the podium and just cough. He's going to do this. And people are going to be like, oh, my God, that's racist.
Yeah, he's trying to give everybody the flu. Oh, my God.
I mean,
that's where America's gone to. I mean, it's been prophesized, man. It's been... There's been people that scholars that have been literally have wrote this in books, literally that this is what's going to happen to America. Because guess what? It happened in Europe. Because Europe I feel like Europe's like 10 or 15 years ahead of us. And whatever happens to Europe happens to us like 10, 15 years later almost, you know, and in certain situations. And that's what's going to happen here. I mean, and I say this, like when Trump it's, and we need a president to talk and say whatever he wants, stuff like that, and say how he feels. I'm not just talking about Trump. Like, even if Oprah Winfrey wins the fucking 2020 ballot, which, God, I hope not, but even if she does, I want her to speak her mind. I don't want her just to go on there and say what she thinks, what people want to hear. No. You're fucking president. Say what you want.
Yeah.
And then, like, The Rock's going to run for 2020. And then everybody's like, oh, I'm voting for The Rock. Well, why? He's a great guy. I've heard nothing but great stories about him. He's very generous. He's a very brilliant, talented man. Would he be president? Fuck no. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. Well, you know what? The Rock will get votes just for the simple fact, just for the fact that he's The Rock, the people's champion. We know him from wrestling. We know him from movies. We love this guy. Yeah. Let's vote. Like, instead of people looking at the political views.
We don't even have to call it the people's eyebrow anymore. We'll call it the presidential eyebrow. You know what I mean? Like, come on. I'm not going to be sitting there voting for him, though. You know what I'm saying? Would it be a great little concept? Of course. I mean, that would get ratings, but that belongs on a TV show, not in reality. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I honestly think there should be higher qualifications to become president than what we have. I mean, honestly, my personal view is JFK was our best president we've ever had, and look what happened to him.
Yep. Yep. See, everybody, you know, it's like whenever somebody does something right, it's like people just get, you know, they don't like it. It's like with Trump, they don't want to hear the truth. And you know what's funny? The presidential doctor, I don't know his name or, you know, whatever, but the presidential doctor that worked on Bush and Obama.
Yeah.
Trump just recently went to get a physical from this guy because, you know, all the liberals are going nuts saying President Trump's got to have dementia, this and that. They're like, he's got to be seen by the presidential doctor. He has to be seen by him. This is enough. And what happens? Trump goes to the doctor. You know, he gets his physical done, and then the doctor goes on there and says that he's in tremendous health, everything's great, and then the liberals come out and say, you know, this doctor couldn't have given him, you know, such a thorough exam, like, the doctor's gotta be wrong on this, like, they turn on their own guy.
Yep, they've been doing that for so long now, especially since Trump's been in office. That's what they do. I mean, I honestly don't understand that. I mean, there's guilty stuff on both sides, whatever you look at. But it's like, it's just overly obvious about them because they literally stick their foot in their mouth so much. It's just, it's stupid. And then what I hated, the one time, this was the other day, it was a couple days ago, I was looking on Facebook Live, and it was when Trump was going to fly over to Switzerland or whatever to do an economic speech or some shit, and they were protesting that Trump was over there or whatever. Which that was stupid propaganda bullshit that the groups fucking try to do. And then, but I was listening, the reason why I was watching it, I wasn't really watching the video, but I was looking at everybody's comments on it. And everybody was hating on Trump. They're like, yeah, keep him. But see, this is the thing that they're bitching about. They're telling another country to keep an American citizen. But they won't. They'll send him back regardless who he is. And if he tries to live there, they'll send him back. Or they have to do the legal immigration stuff, you know what I mean, to become a legal citizen there.
Yep.
But they're the ones that'll first bitch about letting illegal immigrants in. But you're telling another country to keep him. But they'll send his ass back. They're not going to fucking keep him.
No.
But then they're the ones bitching about, you know, oh, we need to take these people in. Well, you're literally contradicting everything you fucking say. And then I love how they try to debate and then somebody like throws facts at them, right? Regardless who it is. They throw any kind of facts at them, regardless what they're talking about. And they get mad at them. They're, oh, you're a fucking moron, and walk away. Like,
yep.
No, dude, let's have a talk, man. This is what I was going to say earlier. Sometimes I get off on tangents. I forget what I'm talking about, but this is what I was talking about earlier about debating with, like liberals and leftist, because I don't truly understand that side, and I want to understand you know, why they feel so passionate about that, because I think it's all horseshit, but I don't want to think it's horseshit. I want to understand it. I want to know where they're coming from. I want to know why people literally sit there for days in and days out on protest and just start yelling and chanting bullshit, like chanting that Trump should die. I'm sorry, but I remember a country that people would be in prison for saying shit like that.
Yeah, and you know what? It's just like with your wrestling, Jesse, like what you just talked about, like you want to learn, you know, the other side. It was just like yep. wrestling. You wanted to learn more, so you left TNA. You're just the person yes. you want to learn everything.
Yep.
And that's friggin' awesome. Oh, by the way, with Oprah, last I heard, I think it was a few days ago or something when she said this, but I don't know if it's true or if it's fake news, because you never know nowadays.
Yeah, nowadays you don't know.
But I heard that Oprah claims that she doesn't have the DNA to run for president, so she will not be running in 2020, but who the fuck knows?
Wow. I don't even think that'll be a problem by then, you know what I mean? Because they're gonna have so much hate for Trump, they're gonna want anybody in there. They're gonna wanna just overflow him. I mean, literally he was president, what, not even 30 days and they were wanting to impeach him. They wanted to impeach him before they announced he won, for crying out loud.
Yeah, they wanted to stop the inauguration. Remember they were protesting. Then when he got inaugurated and they announced him as president, and then they showed that, I think it was a guy or something, I can't remember.
That shows you. That
they
shows
have the glasses right on, and yep. they were screaming, no! Yep. And they were yep. down on their yeah. knees. I'm like, oh my God.
Like, this is America now, and it's sad. It's really, I'm embarrassed that, I'm almost embarrassed to even say that I fought for this country and shit now, because this is what it's turned to. This is not why I joined the military. This is not why I fought for this country. This is not why I live in this country. And I don't know why, I can't, and this is why I want to understand where they're coming from. But I can't really, I haven't found one person that I could truly debate with that doesn't want to argue about it. I want to talk. I mean, arguing is one thing, but like yelling at each other and getting mad at each other, debate is trying to understand each other, trying to get your point across, opinion across, and learning from that, because there's always two sides and three sides and four sides of everything, and I want to truly know why they're so passionate. Why are they on their knees screaming like crazy people in the middle of the streets? I want to know why. Like they yep. think they don't have rights. They think that the struggle is real with them, but they're sitting there wearing designer jeans and brand new shoes and shit. They don't know what struggling really is. They don't know how it is to fucking literally survive on ramen noodles for weeks in a row. Like yep. they don't. So I want to know why they think they're struggling, why they think they're in a fascist state. And that's the other thing. Like, I love how they call Trump fascist and people from the right fascists, but they're the ones, I mean, the true definition of a fascist is taking away their right to speech or free speech. And that's what they try to do. They try to silence people, but they're yelling at people that they're the fascists, but they're the perfect definition of fascism. That right there, I don't understand. They don't want to take a breath, calm down, and look in a dictionary and see what the definition of fascism is. It's because that's what they do. And that's the other thing. Like, they get so mad at that. But look what you're doing. Like, it's almost like you're a constant liar. Like, you lie all the time. But when you look yourself in a mirror late at night at home by yourself, you can't lie for yourself. You know what I mean? You know the truth in that moment. So yep. you know people have that moment. You know what I'm saying? And I would love to know what's going through their brain at that time.
Oh, man, I'd love to as well. Trust me, I would.
Oh, and another, this just popped in my head too. Like these women, they do these women rights, protests and marches and stuff, which is great. That's awesome. Like I would stand the post with you and do the protest with you. Like women should have rights, but it's not the 40s and the 50s anymore. I don't understand. Women, a woman almost won the presidency, for crying out loud. So I don't understand the whole thing about women don't have rights. Actually, you have all the rights, because all you got to do is call up a cop and say, oh, that guy looked at me wrong, sexual harassment, and I'm going to go to jail. I think that's pretty powerful. And if you have a sexual encounter with a man and the next day you regret it, all you got to do is call the cops and say he raped you. And guess where I'm going? I'm going to jail.
Yeah, you didn't even do a damn thing.
That's pretty empowering. I think that's pretty powerful in itself alone. But then when you have these women that do these marches and they're wearing these like pink pussy hats, okay, and they're talking about racism and sexism. Well, not every woman has pink pussies. So how is that going to stand for racism and sexism and shit and you're trying to get rid of it? But that's racism in itself. Not every woman has pink pussy. So I don't understand that. I really don't. Like, they contradict themselves in every freaking way. I don't understand it.
That's what they all do now. It's, I'll tell you, man.
I love how they call people, like, just because you're a white male, you're a neo-Nazi. that I don't understand. Like, Ben Shapiro, I listen to a lot of Ben Shapiro because he's an intelligent man. He's very young and he graduated from, Harvard Law. I mean, he's very intelligent. You know what I'm saying? Now, does he say some risque stuff, meaning like he's kind of like a Trump a little bit? Yeah, he is. But you know what? That's his American right. Everybody else can. Why can't he? But at least he backs his shit up with facts. But then you got people screaming and hating on him, calling him a neo-Nazi. He's a fucking Jew. How is he a Nazi when he's a Jew? And then, like, that Milo Melanopoulos or whatever. I love that guy to death, man, because he doesn't give a fuck, man. He really doesn't care. And then people have the balls to call him homophobic, racist, and a Nazi or something like that. When he's actually a gay white male that's married to a black man. I don't, logic alone. That doesn't mean you're not racist. Really? It fucking doesn't. He's going down on a black man. I think that's the pure definition of not being racist.
Yeah.
Not being homophobic. Like, I don't understand where they're coming from. That just goes back to all they want to do is fight. They want to point the finger, put the blame on somebody else, you know, and it's just, I saw one video and it's the perfect definition of this new, I guess, millennial or whatever they're calling these new, this next generation of people coming out into the workforce.
Oh, millennials.
This girl, she graduated from like Harvard or some shit, right? Very tough school, very richy rich school. You know, you got to be very smart. I got to give her credit. She graduated and all that stuff. That's great. She got lucky and got a job like right out of graduation. And on a Sunday night, the night before she first started her first job, and she did her own video on YouTube. It's fucking great. I got to post it with this video or with this interview. It's funny as hell. And I'll try to find it. She did this video. She's sitting in her car and she's describing this whole thing and playing the victim card like always. And saying that she went out with some friends the night before on a Sunday night and had too much to drink. So she didn't get enough sleep. So she slept in on a Monday morning when she was supposed to first start her first day at work. And she strolled into her job at around 10:30. So she was like 3 hours late. And she strolled in hungover and started putting up shit in her office or whatever. And her boss, which just so happens to be a white male, and of course that's the reason why she's all mad, and she, with his white privilege, walked his ass into my office asking me questions, and I told him, I'm getting my office ready, I'm putting my stuff up, and he goes, no you're not, you're fired. You show up the first day of work, drunk, hungover, and late, 3 hours late, you're gonna get fired. I don't care if you work at McDonald's or, for a CEO in a big corporation, you're gonna get fired. Like that, no, you don't do that. And she completely said it's his fault because he's a white male and with his white privilege. And this was the second day, the day after her first day, she said, I have some poster boards in my back, some signs. I'm gonna protest all day today in front of this company. Like they really give a fuck. Like you'd be trespassing, but that's the mentality of what's coming out of these college campuses now and our schools. Like it's so ridiculous of what these kids are getting taught. You have a lot of these college professors literally teaching people these ways and literally silencing white people just because of their color. Like that's not right. Just because we had slavery in our history doesn't mean you got to take it out on white people today. That's ridiculous because we as white people I mean, I got Native American in me too. Is that a problem? I mean, they were fucking slaves. They didn't have time to be slaves because they massacred them. Those Europeans that illegally immigrated over here that they bitch about all the time. We're all illegal immigrants. No, fuck you. I was born in America. I'm American. And like Native Americans were slaughtered by the millions. By the millions. Okay? It wasn't even about black slavery then. Like, I mean, the people were getting killed just for being here because they wanted to live here. Now that's pretty bad. We got to learn from our history. We got to move on from our history and not blame the people that live in today's society for what happened in the past. As far as I know, I don't know of any slavery owners in my family. As far as I know, okay? As far as I can go back that I know my ancestors, they never had slaveries. They never said the N-word. They don't have hate. You know, they loved people. I have Native Americans in my history, and I know they were loving people to all races. They didn't give a shit.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So who are they to fucking sit there and say, oh, I'm racist because I'm white? That's bullshit. That's being a bigot. That's being a racist.
Exactly, man. Exactly. And I gotta tell you, you know, I miss the old days. I miss the old days, you know, when I was first born. You know, I miss the late 80s and into the 90s. And, you know, it's just like...
Well, do you know why you miss those days? Do you know the reasoning of all this bullshit that's happening right now? And what makes the 80s and the 90s different, or the early 90s different than what's going on right now?
I don't know 100%, but I'm going to take a guess. Is it because back in like the 80s, 90s, around that time, you still had people from the older generations, that were around?
Not only just that, it's called what we're holding on our hands. It's what we're talking in. It's what we're using for the podcast. It's all this social media shit. It's all this technology that's getting too smart for its own good. People are losing the traditions of family. That's what they're losing. And they think that because they, like, I'll give you a perfect example of losing their own traditions and stuff like that. These new social media apps, like Snapchat and shit, they have filters on it. Everybody's so ego-driven now. I tell people this. I go, if you want to understand my problem with thinking, I can spell it out for people with this right here. I go, if you put up a picture of whatever you love to do, like say you, for instance, you love doing these podcasts and stuff. Say you take a selfie of you doing a podcast and you post it up on your website or Facebook or whatever, and you get zero likes. What would that make you feel like?
If I got no likes at all?
Yeah, zero likes. Nobody even paid attention to it.
Honestly, because, you know, I'm not obsessed with social media, you know, like other people are. Like other people, you know, they depend on the likes and dislikes. If I got no likes, I'd be like, well, all right, I guess I got no likes, you know, that's...
Right. But now answer me this. What if you looked on there and had 10,000 likes on it?
If I had 10,000 likes, I'd be happy. I'd be, over the moon. I'd be like, wow, people notice.
Right. Now, do you know why that is or how that is?
That's because I'm already getting sucked into the social media propaganda. When it really doesn't mean anything. It's just a number.
That is definitely a big part of it. Yes, you are 100% correct. But there's a chemical in your brain that it's called dopamine. It gets released in the brain. It's a drug. It's in every one of us. It's what I feel when I go out to the ring. It's that adrenaline rush that comes with it. It's the dopamine that's released in your brain of this high, this feeling of love, this feeling of, wow, somebody likes me. Somebody cares. You know what I mean? And then people go out there with this fake image because like on Snapchat, you have all these fucking bullshit filters and stuff like now, like even cameras on your phone without an app actually does that shit now. It's getting everybody's so self-absorbed especially in this country. And it's ridiculous. Like everybody's so put on the thing they're watching these reality shows. Not reality shows, I'm sorry, but when you have writers, producers, and directors on shows, it's not a reality show. It's not real. It's made up. It's storyline. It's bullshit. Everything you see on TV, I don't give a shit if you're watching a church thing or if you're watching the president shit. It's all bullshit. It's all, there's writers, it's fake. It's bullshit. It's all scripted. It's all a movie. But people don't want to understand that we've been brainwashed since I don't know how long. I mean, that's been proven. That's been CIA ops, you know, for the longest time for these brainwash shit. Do we need that? Of course we do. Of course we do. Because we wouldn't have order. I mean, there's always order out of chaos. So there's always need in chaos, of course. I agree with that 1,000%. But for people to sit there and literally hate each other because of it, come on, there's got to be a line drawn, man. I mean, we all know what's going on. You know what I'm saying? And do we need it? Of course we do. We need order. We need to be successful. But we still do not need to forget who we really are. And that's the problem in America, is we're too ego-driven. We're forgetting who we are. We're forgetting those traditions that were instilled in us in the 40s, in the 50s, in the 60s, you know, learning from their history. Because obviously we are, because there's no slavery anymore. There's no, you know, there's not, you know, there is, women can vote. Women do have equal rights, you know, all this stuff. We are learning, and we're going to continue learning. But in order to learn, you don't have to put people down because of that. You know, because like I said, like putting anybody down just because of their skin color or their race or their sex or they say, well, you need to use the proper pronouns or I'm offended and I call the cops on you. You know what? Fuck you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're not going to make me, as an American, just like yourself, you're not going to make me and force me to say certain things. Because you don't expect that upon you, then why do you expect that upon me? That's how I look at it. And that's why I get a little frustrated when I hear that stuff. Because they're too busy barking orders instead of looking in the mirror. And that is what's wrong with our society. I mean, society's a little sick now. Do we need help? Of course we do. The help comes from each other. The help, we need to work together. That's how we get help. Not fight. Not stay divided.
Oh, you know, being divided is just, it's killing us. You know, it's killing us all. The society, yep. It's even gotten to the point where I say, what society? You know, like...
No, you're 100% right. You are right with that.
And you know, like I've said, you know, people that know me know this, but I'll discuss it here since we're on the topic. Like, it's even gotten to the point, like, where my circle of people that, you know, I talk to or even that I hang with is very small because you don't know with anybody new anymore. It's freaking ridiculous.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, that whole goes through, and this just popped in my head too. Like, literally, we see it a lot on these college campuses, okay? But they expect us to know what gender they are. Like, how the fuck am I supposed to know? You have a shaved head, you don't have any titties, you don't have any, you know what I mean? That sounds sexist, but it's real life. Like, I don't know who you are, but you expect me to all of a sudden know what pronouns do not offend you and use them. I'm not going to go to everybody and be like, what pronouns would you like me to use? What pronouns would you like me to use? I don't even fucking know you. We might have a 2-minute conversation. I don't give a fuck if you have a cock or pussy. I don't give a shit. I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, like, the majority of the people think the same way. Like, people need to stop being so damn offended with people they don't even know and they're not going to know.
Yeah.
You're not even going to know them. You're going to have maybe a 2-minute conversation with them and you say you're offended by them and oh my God, that it just ruined your life. Like, give me a break. You don't even remember his fucking name, but you're going to be offended by them. Like, come on.
Oh, it's freaking ridiculous, man. Absolutely fucking ridiculous.
Is it going to get worse? Of course it's going to get worse. That's the fun part. That is going to be the fun part.
I already learned, you know, to put my big boy underpants on and be strapped in for a big long ride because it's going to get worse.
Podcast? Yes. Yeah. And like we talked about before, I want to get into a podcast doing it myself, but I want to do the whole, like what we're talking about now because I want to know people's, you know, opinions and stuff, regardless what they think regardless if they disagree with me, I want to know their opinions. I want to have these type of conversations with them so I can learn. So maybe, you know, maybe there is some stuff, I doubt it, but maybe there is some stuff on the left side that, you know, I don't know about yet and I agree with. I doubt it, but, you know, there's got to be something because they're still human. They're still fighting for the rights. In their head, they're still fighting for the rights. So there's got to be something that drives them. That's the part. That's the heart and soul I want to get to.
Yeah. And hey, you know what? Look at this as maybe a pilot episode for yourself, at least this part of the podcast.
Little startup right here, man. We're making history.
I'll tell you, I'd listen to you though. If you get it off the ground, you got to let me know if it ever gets going.
Yeah. I mean, I already got a name for it and everything. So I'm like literally right there close to just starting it up, man. Cause I've already put feelers out on my Facebook. I got a lot of support, regardless what they believe in, whichever side they think they're on or whatever, or feel that they're on. They agree. They want me to have a podcast because I want to give people a platform not to argue, but to state their opinion and not feel like they're going to get hate because of it. I want to give people that platform. You know what I mean? And I mean, I might agree with stuff that people think that it's crazy to agree with, and I think the same way about them, but I feel that we need to be able to, as humans, as Americans, to be on a regular platform to debate, to talk, to speak, to get your feelings out. Because that's another thing I feel that people think they're all claustrophobic, and you know what I mean? Like the walls are closing in on them and stuff like that. Like they should have a platform to speak their mind. They shouldn't be silenced.
You're right. You know, everybody should have some sort of a platform, but yep. you know, when they start getting carried away like some of these people, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, but I think it's healthy. I think it's really healthy to have conversations like this, but people don't. They generally keep it all in. They get aggressive. They get angry. There's a reason why the divorce rates flying high in America. Yep. The assault and battery and murder and rape and everything is going way the fuck up, but nobody wants to see that fact or do anything about it. They just want to bitch about it. Well, let's do stuff about it. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the shit people are afraid to talk about. Why not? We're all human. We all have feelings. We all have opinions. Why can't we speak out about shit?
That's why I come on here, you know, and do what I do for, you know, with the podcast as far as, you know, the wrestling business goes. Like, I'll be honest with you. And, you know, you don't have to answer to this if you don't want to because, you know, I know, you know, your goal and where you want to end up, but I'm speaking from my personal opinion here. This is, and I want nobody to get their wires crossed just because Jesse's on here. It has nothing to do with him. This is all me now and how I feel.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I gotta say that nowadays because, you know, if I don't, everybody will think something different. So no, this is nothing to do with Jesse. This is all me when I say this.
Yeah.
I watch WWE a lot of times now and, you know, sometimes I like it. There's other times that I am basically yelling in front of the computer almost like a lunatic to be entertaining and being like, why the fuck did they do this? Couldn't they do this? This would have been better. I could book this better. I could book this better. And well, you know what?
You're a fan. You have every right to feel that way, either it be positive or negative. You have every right to feel that way. And I do too. I see some shit on there and I ain't afraid to fucking say it. And I'm sure they do too, but they're not publicly speaking about it. But there are some shit that like, what the fuck were they thinking? You know, but that's my personal opinion. But you know there's people out there be like, wow, that was a great fucking segment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there are people with different opinions, stuff like that. You're not going to like 100% of what they have. But yeah, of course, I don't blame you for getting pissed and be like, what the fuck was that about?
And you know, the whole thing is that then I get people that come on and want to attack me, that hate me. And then I'm like, listen, this is me talking to the fan base. I'm like, listen, people, I've said it many, many times. I'm going to come on here and give you real wrestling talk, you know, from my opinion and the way that it's meant to be heard. I'm like, I am not a guy that's going to get down on my knees and kiss the WWE's ass.
I know a lot of people there that appreciate that. And you know what's, you know why I appreciate stuff like that? And if I was in that high position, why I would appreciate that? Because that would make me better. Me as a wrestler or a producer or a writer or something like that, I need to hear negative shit. You think in Team 3D Academy I was doing matches in front of Bubba and he's like, yep, that was great. No, not a single match, not one single match, he did not say that to me. He was always critiquing. And that's what made me better as a wrestler and as a human being in the wrestling business. And that goes for all aspects of life in life, is that we need criticism to make us better, not to tear us down, but to make us better. And not a lot of people see it that way. They just say, oh, you're just bad mouthing me. You're just hate. You're full of hate. No, criticism is really good because it makes people better. And for you as a fan and as a podcast guy, you know, your opinion does matter regardless what people think. And if you think something negative, especially if I'm on there, I would love to hear it because you know what? Next time I might want to tweak that a little bit. I want to make it better or something like that. That just makes things better for everybody, for not just my career or the wrestlers that are on TV's career, but also fans watching it.
Yeah. And you know, it's like, do I go over the top sometimes or maybe a lot of times? Yeah, you know, I use explicit language and I get, you know, but you know, it's funny, Jesse, when I fly off the handle, when I'm like in rage mode flying off the handle,
yeah,
I get the most views for some reason.
Of course, like you said before, like Eric Bischoff, like controversy creates cash.
Yeah.
I post certain stuff for a reason. I'm not a very religious person, but I do read the Bible and some Bible verses hit to heart, you know, that type of thing or whatever. And I post some of it. Like I said, I'm not a religious person, but I like to see all aspects of things in life. I want to know why people praise, you know, this God that they talk about and believe a guy walked on water and stuff like that. I want to know why. I want to know all aspects of life. You know, I want to take full advantage of every second I'm still breathing, you know, that type of thing. So, you know, I totally lost my thought. What the fuck is it talking about?
Oh, you were talking about how you're not really a religious guy, but you want to learn things.
Oh, yeah. Goddamn, too many concussions. So I post some Bible verses every now and then, and to go back to those whole likes and everybody ignoring it, you know, I get like maybe 15 to 20 likes on Bible verses, right? Mm-hmm. And then if I post some thing about Trump or the $15 minimum wage thing, over 200 comments and likes and dislikes and just, there's so much attention on stupid shit. You know what I'm like? And I'm like, where are people's minds at? You know what I mean? It's just built on hate and hatred. Like, why can't we, like we've been talking about, like, why can't we discuss things on a normal basis? And people would rather see like two kids fighting on the street on YouTube than watching a kid coming home with straight A's showing his parents.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What is wrong with a society like that? They would rather see that shit. Or a perfect example of this. If they see somebody, having a seizure or something like that or fell and busted their head on the concrete, they would rather get their phones out and film it for their YouTube channel than actually help the person. What kind of society? What have we done to get to a society like this?
Oh, you know what? It's sickening, really, at times, yeah. What I see and what I hear. It's absolutely sickening.
Well.
And unfortunately, you know, We have to live amongst it, but you know what? You know what'll make us better than all these other people that are doing this stupid shit? We're gonna rise above it.
Yep. No, you're 100% right. Like we can't be impacted by this negative, evil fucking bullshit. People just find themselves in. And like I said always, and I always say this, I'm human, man. I make mistakes too. Sometimes I find myself, you know, in this negative world and stuff like that. But, you know, I do some meditating and I get back to being positive and I do my best to try and keep that way.
Yeah. And I'll give you a little taste, Jesse, and then we'll move on to the fun stuff in the podcast, the fun questions that I have left for you. But
yeah.
I want to throw something in on you about just the way I critique wrestling, you know, just for a little taste to kind of, you know, get you to hear where I'm coming from, like with WrestleMania 33, okay?
Yeah.
They booked The Undertaker versus Roman Reigns. Now, I was not in favor of that. I actually had a whole different idea. And I'm not going to give you the long-winded thing because I'm sure you don't want to, you know, be here 45 minutes, half hour, you know, listening to me book a wrestling thing that already happened. Yeah, but
I've listened to me for hours. I mean, like, literally it's going on 3 hours.
Hey, you're doing good and you're right. It's officially my longest podcast I ever had.
Yeah, literally the longest podcast I've been on. It's been good though.
I'm glad you're enjoying yourself, man. That's, that makes me real happy to hear that.
Yeah.
But mainly what I thought up instead of them doing Roman Reigns and The Undertaker, I pitched this to my audience and I'll tell you, a lot of people loved it. I really didn't hear anyone disagreeing with me, you know, for once, which was kind of surprising. I pitched for The Undertaker to return at TLC when Styles fought Ambrose. And Styles won. Now keep in mind, TLC was in Dallas, Texas that time. Yeah. I said they should have booked where the lights would have went out, they would have came back on, The Undertaker would have chokeslammed Styles off the ladder. Boom. Yeah. Royal Rumble build, Styles versus Undertaker. There you go, for the title.
Yeah, that would have been great.
Taker wins the title, Cena wins the Rumble, then you build up to them having their rivalry, and then, you know, Cena talks about how important it is for him to tie Ric Flair's record at 16. Undertaker talks about, you know, how his career is, you know, most important, how he built a legacy.
Yep.
Very simple on what you do here. It's not just the match, you make a stipulation.
Oh yeah, it makes sense.
You have John Cena, you could have The Undertaker say, well, if I beat you, then you will never again, not on Raw, not on SmackDown, on any show period, you will never again be able to challenge for the WWE title ever again. Period. Yeah. Your dream of chasing 16 is done and out the window.
Yep.
And then Cena would fire back and say, all right, I'll take that bet, Taker, but you know what? If I beat you, your career is over.
Yes.
Very simple on what you do then when you get to WrestleMania. Because we know, you know, I love John Cena. I love, you know, I'm one of the people that actually love John Cena to death, but.
You're the only one.
Yeah. That's true, you know, cause so many fans, oh my God, I've never seen so much hate for a wrestler at some time.
That's the great thing about wrestling, man. And he's loving it too, I'm sure. And I'd be the same way, man. That's what's great about wrestling.
Yep. But the one thing I had in my head was, how do you turn John Cena heel at this point and make it feel important and make it really good?
Yeah.
Yep. Unlike you put him against Undertaker, you have him do this match, you have it built on respect, because we all remember back in 2002 when Cena debuted, Taker shook his hand and gave him that endorsement as a rookie.
Oh yeah.
Could work it up, it's built on respect, you get to the match, you know, Cena's hitting Taker with everything he's got, Taker keeps kicking out. You do something very WrestleMania 17-esque, but you don't have Mr. McMahon involved. You just see Cena's expression change. You see him growing frustrated. You see him second-guessing, never give up, you know, never quit, his whole motto.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
He ends up throwing it all away, beating Taker with weapons, taking the cheapest way out that he can, wins the match, wins the title, stands over Taker with his foot on his chest and looks down and he spits on him.
Yeah, that would make him a heel, big time.
And you know how much money, more money that would have generated rather than Undertaker and Roman Reigns? And I'm not saying this to stroke my own ego, but I really believe it would have.
No, that would have been great. That's a great storyline right there. That would have definitely got a shitload of ratings and changed the whole, like, afterwards of each of their careers and everything. It would give Undertaker a great platform to leave on. You know, cause he made a big difference in John Cena's career, made him a heel that nobody else probably could have done, you know, and then John Cena, he could move even further in his career, which, I mean, he's at the top of the be all of top, but now he could even more further his career by being a heel finally.
Yeah, just like Hogan did in the NWO. Yeah. And I believe a heel turn done that way with Cena would have had a huge effect. Now, another thing that I had, you know, when Taker was still, when he still had the streak, now this is a quick one, when Taker still had the streak, WrestleMania 30, I proposed, instead of Taker losing the streak to Brock Lesnar, why don't you have Cena and Taker fight there? But this is what would have made it so interesting. And some people would have probably found it unbelievable, but I think this would have caused buy rates to go crazy and people to buy all the tickets up. Undertaker versus John Cena in an I Quit match with the streak on the line.
Yeah.
Who's going to quit? Who out of those two guys will quit?
Yeah, that would, everybody would be having mixed feelings about that.
I think it would have been something great to see, but you know, that's what I do. I basically sit in front of the computer and that's what I do. You know, when a storyline is presented, I'm always the one dissecting and picking it apart and saying, this is what should be done. And sometimes when I get frustrated enough, I'm like, see, this is what should be done. Hey, Vince, why don't you give me a call? Why don't you give me a call and just hire me? You don't even have to pay me. Bring me in on a trial run for a week. Come on.
Yeah.
That's what I do. Like, when I'm not doing stuff like this, that's basically, what I'm about, you know? But I have fun with it, man. I really love the sport.
Well, that's the great thing about wrestling, man. You have, no matter what you think and what you're against, you're still having fun with it, you know?
Oh, I love it, you know, and wrestling is something that's opened up so many doors for me. Oh my God. Just to even have the honor to sit here with you today, like if you would have told me back in 2009 or 2010, because I can't really remember the year, but if you would have told me, you know, 7-8 years ago, because I was watching, you know, TNA all the time. I watch whatever wrestling's on TV. That's just me. And I knew of you and Shannon Moore, you know, very well. Believe me, I saw the matches, you know, that you spoke of even. And if you would have told me, you know, 8-9 years ago that I'd be sitting here talking with Jesse Neal from TNA, I would have said, oh my God, you gotta be crazy. But I went out and I took that risk. Just to do it and see how people would respond. And I decided I'm not going to be afraid. And you know, we're here today doing this.
Yeah, it's a great thing, man. It's weird how the wrestling business works.
It brings a lot of great things in though. I am so happy for it.
That's good.
But let's do some fun stuff before we close out here. Let's do some fun stuff.
All right.
This will get people thinking, you know, on possible things that they might see from you, you know, at some point.
I think I opened my eyes with just this interview by itself.
Say that again, Jesse. I didn't hear you.
I said I think I've already opened some eyes with this interview.
Oh, hey, believe me, you have, man. We didn't just hear about your career. We heard about really who Jesse Neal is as a man, which really...
Yeah.
I haven't really got that in many interviews, you know, it's normally just the career and this and that, but you know, and now it's like I actually know what you're all about, who you are, and so do the fans, which I think that's great.
Yeah, definitely.
But as far as, alright, we established everything in your career with TNA and what you've done, and I'm just thinking now at the point where you're at, and you know, this is like a couple things as far as fantasy booking goes. And, this could be a two-part question unless, you know, your answer is, you know, just one person and that's it. We'll see, but.
Yeah.
If you had to choose anybody, and I'm talking anybody in the world, you know, anybody that was a wrestler, living or dead even, if you had a chance to face any one man that you could, who would be your dream opponent? And the second part to that question is if, as far as any active professional wrestling roster in the world right now, anybody that's active right now, who would you want to get in the ring with more than anybody? So two parts there.
Let me break it down this way. Let's say, like in days, I would love to go against the Road Warriors.
Nice.
Let's say single wise, I would love to be on that platform with the like WWE with maybe somebody like AJ Styles. I've been in actually matches with him on the road, but it was tag matches and stuff. I'm talking about like maybe a singles match. That would be great. I think we could do great stuff. Somebody like, Finn Balor, Adam Cole, you know, those type of guys. Let's see. Yeah, other than people that I've wrestled, yeah, I guess that's pretty much who I'd like really want to get in the ring with. I've been in the ring with Kurt Angle. That was an honor. His prime, I would have loved. I mean, even though he's a fucking machine, he can still tear down a house. I would have loved to have been, you know, in his prime, got to be a thing with him, learn from him. Jeff Hardy, I think me and him would tear down the, actually above everybody else to, let's say, I think me and this guy could be in a storyline for a good year or two or something like that and build like major pay-per-views is CM Punk. Me and Punk, I think just on the mic alone with just giving me and him back and forth, I think would be great.
Oh man, I can imagine, you know, just seeing how you're able to talk, you know, when you're being yourself.
Yeah.
Man, and you know, we've seen what Punk can do obviously, but man, you guys in a back and forth battle, who?
Fun. That would be fun.
That'd be a good one right there. I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
Now, as far as, I guess this one could be a two-part question unless your opponent turns out to be, you know, the feud part as well. But let me ask it. What is your favorite match that you have ever had in your entire career? And what is your favorite feud that you ever had in your entire career?
And what was the second part?
Your favorite feud that you ever had, like a rivalry, because I know sometimes some people's favorite matches are different than their rivalry, so that's why I asked two parts.
Actually my favorite match would probably from the indies. It would probably be with one of my buddies, Max Stardom. I had probably three or four matches with this guy, and man, I'm telling you what, it didn't matter. We could go in there blinded, man, and we could tear down the house together. Some of my best matches, he has brought the best out in me in a lot of those matches. So that'd probably be my favorite, like, singles guy to wrestle, that I have wrestled. Like storyline wise, themes, stuff like that. I had a lot of fun with, when like Ink was wrestling like Generation Media, Motor Machine Guns, so, you know, those times where we had like triple threats and stuff. Man, like we had so much fun and the possibilities of what we could have done in the ring, man, it'd be endless, man. It would be so much fun.
Oh man, I remember those days too. I remember those feuds.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly wish I could wrestle them now because I'm more comfortable in the ring, if that makes sense. I mean, like I've wrestled, like even just talking about the comfortability now in my career, since I've been on the indies and away from TNA and stuff like that, and have just grown more. Like I've wrestled Kenny Omega. I wrestled him in Canada last year. That was a blast. I mean, we literally just had fun. We didn't even stay in the ring. We did some crazy shit outside the building.
Wow.
We were messing around in the, like he slammed me into a dumpster and then I slammed him. I threw him from a wheelbarrow down in a ditch and like, I mean, we had all kinds of, and literally the entire crowd in Calgary, like came out with us and followed us outside. It was amazing. Like it was so much fun.
Oh, that sounds like a blast.
Yeah. Not a lot of people seen that, which I'm kind of disappointed because that was actually fun, man. And that's what I was talking about, the comfortability. Like me and him, we just gelled. Like we had great chemistry in the ring together and we had fun. Like we had a blast. Like I literally had a fan. We were outside and there was this big branch and I had a fan hold this wooden frame from like a window frame up so I could build like a table out of junk wood that was just leaning up against this barn that was from outside. And I had Kenny stop me from I jumped up on this branch to kick him in the face, and he stopped me, grabbed me in a power bomb, and slammed me right through the table from a fan holding the window frame for the table. And that was so much, like, just stuff like that. That was a really fun match too. But it's just that, like I would just love to wrestle them on TV now, you know, with my comfortability in the ring and what I'm capable of now. You know what I mean? I think we would definitely make history.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt about it. And you know, right now you're a veteran, Jesse. You know, you know what it's all about in that ring. Oh, by the way, before I don't want this to slip my mind, because I've been wanting to tell you this and then I always move on to something else. I'll get back to this in a little bit. I want to tell you, you know, we've talked, you know, how we talked about how people are in this world lately and, you know, people don't think about, you know, the men and women that put their lives on the line and whatnot. And I know you served, you know, for our free, you know, you, for our freedom, for our country. And I just want to say, you know, from me, and I know it's been a while ago, but I just want to say from me, thank you for your service and what you did for our country.
It's been till 2002, and I still appreciate it every time I hear that, man. Thank you.
Oh, no problem, man. You deserve it. I mean, after everything, you know, that you went through and putting your life on the line for all of us just to have freedom, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
But, yeah, man, you know, the matches you were talking about, very fun. You know, I'd love to see that Omega match. I wish there'd be video of it somewhere.
Yeah, there's video of it up on YouTube.
Oh, I'll definitely.
I'll send you the link. Like, some of it's the problem with, because we were trying to get out there during the daytime so the video would be better, but you could still get the gist of what we were doing and stuff like that. Like, you could just tell we were having fun.
That's awesome. You know what? Nothing better than just going out there and having some fun.
Yeah.
And trying to think. I know I only had a couple things left. I'm trying to think what else I had lined up for you. Oh, as far as right now, with your future, Jesse, how was life after TNA, you know, once you got going on the indie circuit and, you know, take us a little bit through that. And also, what are you up to today? And, you know, what are your plans, you know, going forward for this calendar year as well?
Well, what I loved about, like, when I left TNA, obviously that was a very, like, traumatic time. Because I left a contract that I worked so hard for. But I've learned from it, man. I've grown a lot in and out of that ring. I've definitely earned a lot more fans since I left TNA. For one, I became a way better wrestler now. Like, we were just talking about my comfortability now. It's insane. Like, and I really found out what I'm capable of. And it's scary to know what I'm capable of. And it's like, I was on TV and had no clue. You know what I mean? Like, I had the red light on me. I had the great opportunity. And don't get me wrong. I took every step forward of that opportunity I had while I was on TV. But imagine now, like, what I'm capable of now and what I know what I'm capable of now. It's just endless. And the history that I could be a part of would be amazing. But, and hopefully, you know, that opportunity does still. And I still have plans, I still have that dream and go with, WWE and stuff like that, you know, hoping for that phone call and, you know, still getting an extra spot at NXT or Raw or SmackDown, you know, just putting my foot back in the door and, you know, just saying, hey guys, I'm still here, you know, that type of thing. So I still have that dream but I'm working real hard on the indies, man. I'm having fun. I'm enjoying life, man. And I've learned that. Since I left TNA too, is that it was almost like I was wrestling for somebody else. You know what I mean? And I've always had that in the back of my head that, you know, my buddy, we always had, you know, we had a couple pay-per-view parties at my house when I was in the Navy with all the boys and stuff, or some of the boys from the ship. And, you know, it's just beers and steaks and hanging out. And I would be the guy running around with my Triple H jersey on, you know, mm-hmm. doing the suck it thing. And you know what I mean? It was a fun time for me, you know what I mean? And still every day I get in that ring, even though, you know, I was on TV and even now I'm on the indies, I don't care what platform I'm in that ring. I still have that idea in the back of my head. I'm like, I know my buddies are proud of me, you know, I'm still doing it and I'm still having fun with it. And that's what makes it worthwhile even more because I'm having more fun with it, you know, and I'm like we were talking about, I'm more comfortable in the ring because I'm having more fun with it. I'm having like, I'm wrestling friends of mine and we're in there beating the shit out of each other, but we're having fun doing it, you know, and that's what makes it worth it. That's what, you know, the fans see and appreciate. And I just keep growing from there. It's amazing how like, I work for less indie shows now, but I feel like I'm working more. I'm putting more into my promos. I'm putting more into my matches and just the time I have with the fans signing autographs or just taking pictures or that, you know, one special kid we're doing the show for or the cause or whatever. It makes it completely worth it, you know, and even like now today, I wrestle people that I've wrestled my first year in the business, and to wrestle them now, we sit back and laugh and like, can't believe, you know, we're doing this still 10 years down the road and we're having so much more fun now and we've grown so much together down the road. And then of course there's some of them that I can't even stand to look at anymore. You know what I mean? That's going to happen, but you know, that's just the business in life. But I mean, my plans going forward is obviously, you know, wrestling business wise is, you know, obviously WWE, you know, I still have that dream and I want to, you know, sign that contract and do something that makes history and makes a lot of money doing it. You know, that's what I want to do. But most of all, I just want to, I want to live my life. I want to be happy in my personal life. I want to be, you know, I have, she'll be four in April, a daughter, and you know, she's my world right now. You know what I mean? Like she's my life, you know, and that's what makes me happy. And if I didn't have the wrestling business, I wouldn't have my daughter today. You know what I mean? So, I definitely got a lot out of the business so far, and I look forward to getting a lot more, in the years to come. Like, I'm wrestling, this weekend, tomorrow, I'm wrestling Rob Terry, and then, he was from TNA or whatever. And then, next Saturday, I'm gonna be in the ring with Kevin Sullivan, for crying out loud. Like, that's gonna be an honor. And it's gonna be awesome. And then the next week, I'm wrestling Tommy Dreamer and Coco. So it's like, I got a pretty good week, pretty good 3 weeks coming up, you know, with being in the ring with guys, you know, and that's just gonna be more memories, you know, in and out of the ring. So it's gonna be a lot of fun. I look forward to it and keep growing from there and still making history no matter no matter what stage I'm on.
Oh man, you know what? It's, just the next 3 weeks you got ahead of you. I got excited. Like I actually got, you know, like exciting chills through, you know, through my spine just hearing it.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And then, I think I'm going to be wrestling James Storm the month after that. So it's like, it's going to be pretty crazy this year with the people I'm going to be in the ring with.
Well, I hope I get to see some of this content. Hopefully it gets filmed and put on YouTube or something.
Because... Oh, yeah. I'll be putting it all over social media. You know, being the social whore we are.
Got to take advantage of it, right? I mean...
Yeah, of course.
I mean, you know, since other people use it, you know, for stupid shit sometimes, you know, use it for the good.
Of course, man. All that propaganda bullshit that tries to brainwash us. We gotta be the resistance, right?
Right, man. But I'm definitely excited to see, you know, what you're going to be putting out in the wrestling biz. And one thing I am curious of, I know WWE is the ultimate for you. Have you ever considered, I guess, you know, this is... Maybe I'll ask it one at a time so I don't confuse you. Have you ever considered going back to TNA?
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, like say if they would call me now, would I come and do a taping with them? Of course I would. I mean, it would be a lot of fun to work with some of the guys there because there's still some of the guys I worked with that are there. And then there's a bunch of new kids that I would love to work with.
Nice. How about, New Japan, New Japan, how's your feelings on that?
I would cut off my left testicle to wrestle for New Japan.
Wow, so you're ready to go when it comes to that.
Yeah, my bag's already packed, so.
maybe Bullet Club Jesse?
You know? Oh dude, that would be awesome, man. That'd be fantastic. I love what they're doing over there. Like I've talked to the Young Bucks about it. I talked to Kenny Omega when I was with him, up in Canada. I just tell him, you know, I love what you guys are doing for the business and stuff like that. It's amazing that, you know, you guys are doing that and having fun. And, That'd be great to be a part of that, man. I would fucking kill it, man. That'd be awesome.
Man, hopefully it happens, you know?
Yeah.
What about, Ring of Honor? What's your feelings on good old ROH?
Ring of Honor would be fun, man. I know a lot of the guys that are still there and stuff like that. Like Delirious, man, he's an awesome down to earth dude. I met him a couple times and talked to him over the phone a couple more times. And I mean, he's a great guy. You know what I mean? And they got a great, great company that they're working with and stuff like that. Man, they're doing it. They're living the dream and there's a lot of big stars that are coming out of there and that are still there. So, I mean, it would be great to like Christopher Daniels and Kazarian and stuff. That'd be awesome to be back in the ring with those guys. You know what I mean? Tearing it up in front of that crowd.
Oh yeah. Now this would be a fun thing to close on before we head out of here. This is a part I usually save for the end. You know, like normally I'll ask people, you know, would you ever consider going to WWE or signing? But I know you've answered that, you know, numerous times throughout the podcast. I know that's
your. Well, I would give my left testicle for New Japan. I'll give my right testicle for WWE.
Ah, there you go. Hey, you know what? It just goes to show your passion and how much you really want to be there, how much it means to you. But instead of asking you, you know, about, oh, would you sign or this and that, or, you know, what would you want to come out of it, you know, whatever, I want to ask you about your extra roles that you've had with them, good memories you've had doing extra work for the WWE. Like, what were you a part of?
I'll tell you a great moment I had with WWE so far. I've never been in the ring in front of a WWE crowd just yet. I've wrestled in WWE rings before in front of Regal and, you know, after SmackDown and stuff like that or whatever, which was great. I wrestled a guy I've wrestled ever since I started in the wrestling business, and we had one hell of a match in front of all the boys, the roster over there in the Raw and SmackDown rosters. They came out to watch my match and stuff, and it was an honor just wrestling in front of those guys, you know what I mean? So it was really fun to wrestle in a huge arena again like that. But one of my favorite moments was at my tryout. I did all the tryout. I did the heavy crazy drills when Bill DeMott was there and, Billy Gunn was there and stuff. It was so much fun. Did my match there in front of them and stuff, but my favorite moment of all time would probably be doing my promo in front of Dusty Rhodes before he passed. Like for one, it was a true honor to do my promo in front of all those coaches there. But for Dusty Rhodes to sit there and put over my promo and tell me, thank you for your service and thank you for your honesty on your promo. And you have so much feeling in your words. Just to hear that from a legend of that stature was amazing. Like I had goosebumps, you know, underneath my suit that I was wearing after my promo of him just speaking that way. And then all the rest of the coaches, you know, spoke after him, like Jerry Briscoe, Billy Gunn, you know, Bill DeMott, Norman Smiley, you know, all those guys, they were just literally putting over my promo. It meant a lot to me because, you know, I put so much time and effort and hard work into everything I've done just to sit there at a tryout, not only just to get a contract, but a tryout, just sitting there hearing all these positive things they were giving me. It was a true honor. And that moment there will live with me forever.
Wow. That sounds incredible, man. And I got to tell you, you know, to go through that, I'm happy for you. You know, that sounds like a very positive tryout that you had. And I really hope that they do call you back for some things.
Yeah, I really hope so too. Cause honestly, I still got a lot to prove. I want to show the fans what I'm capable of, and they really haven't seen everything of what Jesse Neal has to show them.
And I know you got a lot more to give, you know, like a lot of people, you know, they consider, you know, sport athletes or sometimes even wrestlers, you know, when you're getting near the age of 40, they're like, ah, you know, how much can you have left? But yeah. It seems like you kept yourself in very good physical condition. You sound like you're ready to go, and I believe that you do have a lot more to give. You know what? Age is just a number, man.
Yep. Well, like I always said, man, and I still say it till today. Literally, I wrote it in an email yesterday. I have my back. My bag is always packed.
That's the best thing you can do, man. Just keep a bag packed. Be ready to go. That way you get a call.
Well, I have, to be honest with you, I have a wrestling bag packed and a survival kit bag packed because you never know.
Yep. It's true. You never know these days, man.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
You got to be ready to go at all times.
Yep.
Now, I got to tell you, man, I know a lot of people, you know, I've heard some people say that their end game is just to wrestle for the WWE. I've heard some people say, you know, that if they would ever make it to WWE, you know, they have to get there. They have to become champion. You know, they have to do this. And there's, you know, all these things they set out to accomplish. Now, are you one of those people that if you would get in, you'd be satisfied with just, you know, getting in and wrestling? Or do you want to take it to the next level, you know, and, you know, get in and win titles and main event WrestleManias? Like, is that like your main goal that's on your radar?
Well, I'm definitely not that guy that always says, you know, I want to win the WWE Heavyweight Championship in Madison Square Garden and stuff. I mean, yeah, that would be nice and everything, but my main goal is to get that phone call and to start my career there. And then from there, I would build on top of that, because you never know where that could take you. You know, the opportunities that you could get through WWE alone is endless. Like, I mean, look at all the people. Like, I mean, look at John Cena. He wrestles how long for WWE? Forever. You know what I mean? And he's pretty much hit every trophy you can get in WWE. You're that brass ring, you know? And then you got like somebody like The Rock, you know, that transformed his wrestling career into a movie career. So, you know, there's so much endless stuff that you can do in this world through the WWE, through wrestling, you know? So I can't really just pinpoint exactly what I would like to do. I mean, do I have in mind some stuff? Oh, of course. Do I want to do acting? Of course. I love acting. I love, you know, for one, I love speaking my mind. Like, one time I did a WWE, extra thing at SmackDown, and they had me go into this room and do like 7 different promos with different emotions. And I could turn it on and off like crazy. And that's one good thing I've learned over these years being in wrestling, is to control my emotions. I can make myself cry on the drop of a hat. I can be angry. I can turn that into a smile real quick. Either it be creepy or a happy smile, you know, and like within seconds, you know. I've had the Brooklyn Brawler sit there and tell me, you know, wow, you are so real when you speak, or and your expressions on your face, you know. I told them one time a promo, they told me to tell them a story, you know, and I told them a story and they're like, oh my God, did that really happen? I start laughing. I'm like, no, I made the whole shit up on the fly. Mm-hmm. And they all start like, holy shit, that was so real. And I was like, I'm just having fun with it. You know what I mean? Like, so it could be, it's just endless what the possibilities could be, especially with a company like WWE or, you know, I mean, I would love to, this is the major goal. Or I guess thing that I look forward to and want to accomplish is I want my name to live forever. I don't want to be forgotten about. I don't want to be when I die and this body, you know, just turns to dust in the wind. You know what I mean? I don't want to be forgotten about. I want to be able to, for somebody to, you know, to look at online and see the good things that I've done and be like, wow, man, that was a great athlete at one time, you know, or somebody mentioned my name and people be like, I knew who that guy was. You know what I mean? I just want to be remembered.
Hey man, I'm rooting for you every step of the way. And, you know, I really wish you the best of luck. I wish you all the success in the world. And I hope that this does come to fruition for you, because
I appreciate it, man. I appreciate that.
After hearing the way that you speak and the way you conduct yourself and just the kind of person you are, you're real, you're genuine, and you definitely deserve to get this opportunity. And I hope it happens.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate that.
Hey, no problem, man. And also, do you prefer being babyface or heel?
For 10 years, I've been a babyface. I would say I was a heel for maybe 2 weeks, and that was it. So, honestly, I would kind of like to turn heel, man. I would like to see where I can go with that, you know. And I mean, my character now is kind of like my real life, you know. It goes like my promos. If you look at some of my new promos, and I'm about to do a new promo here this weekend for the Dreamer match coming up. I mean, it's going to be pretty demonic. It's going to be pretty evil, but I'm still a babyface. You know what I mean? And people want to hear, they want to hear and see stuff like that. You know, it's going to be some real shit, some real emotion, some real feeling. And then of course some fun and wrestling involved. So, you know, it's going to be fun.
I'm excited, man. I'll be, checking things out on YouTube and, checking out your content.
Sounds good, man. I really appreciate it.
Well, Jesse, it's been an incredible interview. I've had a fucking blast on here. I really have. Hey, I mean,
I appreciate it, man. It's an honor being on the show, man. Thank you. I really appreciate it, son.
And I'm glad that you, you know, I'm glad that you spent a lot of time, you know, not only for me, because, you know, I always tell people when they come on here, you know, take as much time as you need. You know, I'm not a show that has a time limit. And, you know, I feel some people, you know, they might think I'm just saying that to be nice or, you know, to pull their leg or whatnot. But no, I really mean it. And I'm glad you took advantage of that and, you know, just spoke on whatever you wanted to. Like, you know, it didn't just stick to wrestling. You really got into some real life, you know, issues and real life beliefs. And I'm glad you did that, because this is what I always try to tell people that I'm all about. But yeah, you, Jesse, actually showed it, because it really is what I'm all about. Anybody can say what they want when they come on here, and that's what I pride this show on.
You gotta give people a platform to be able to speak, man. I really appreciate you giving me that platform, man.
Hey, no problem at all. And, you know, with you still being in wrestling, if there's ever a time, you know, trust me, don't hesitate. If there's ever a time, you know, say you got shows coming up, if you have something you want me to promote on this podcast, you could always feel free to, shoot me a text.
Sounds good, man. I'll throw some quick ones out right now, man. Like we were just talking about, I'm wrestling Rob Terrio, Rumble Kingdom or something like that in, Newport Richey, tomorrow. Next weekend I'll be in Orlando, Sunday. Wrestling Kevin Sullivan for USA Pro, which is a well-known indie show up in New York. Frank Goodman, he's down here now doing some shows. We've killed it for years down here in Orlando. And then of course the big one in Coco, AWE, Atomic, Wrestling Entertainment. Do a lot of great matches out there, a lot of great people on the show, a lot of great people on the fans. I'm wrestling Tommy Dreamer, man. It's going to be an awesome match, and it's going to be a real honor to be in the ring with that guy. So got a lot of good things coming up. So I appreciate you letting me, spill my shit on your show.
Hey man, no problem. And if there's ever anything else, like I said, you can text me the info, or even if you just want to come on a show and do, you know, a quick pop in just to promote what you got going on. Hey man, I'm totally cool with it. Anything to, get the word around to help you out, I'd be more than happy to do so.
Yeah, appreciate it.
And, anything on social media as far as, you know, those platforms go, anything that you'd like to promote as far as where your fans can, keep in touch with you?
It's just real basic. My Twitter is TheJesseNeil, Instagram, TheJesseNeil. Snapchat I don't really use because it's fucking stupid, but it's TheJesseNeil. and then of course Facebook is, facebook.com/bookJesseNeil. Basically all you gotta do is Google my name and you can find me.
We know where to find you, man.
Yep.
But, I gotta tell you, you know, with all this and touching on everything, man, you took me on a trip tonight. I'll tell you, this was one fun interview to conduct. I'm actually very honored and very happy that, you know, I got to be the one to conduct this interview with you. And really, I can't thank you enough for, for accepting the invitation to come on. And like I said earlier, and I'll say it one more time, thank you for your service in the armed forces, you know, for fighting for our country and our freedom, and also for the sacrifices that you gave in your life to, to do pro wrestling, and the time that you spent away from family, and, you know, all the long nights on the road, and everything that you sacrificed just to entertain, you know, fans like myself that paid hard-earned money to get a ticket to watch you perform. But for you to put your body on the line for the sake of our entertainment, for all that, Jesse Neal, I say thank you for all of it.
No, I really appreciate it, man. Thank you, man. Thank you for being a fan. Thanks, like I said, for giving me this platform to speak my mind.
Hey, man, and if you ever have more stuff, you know, happen along the way, also, you know, in your career, you know, more things with wrestling, if you ever want to come back on and do a part two, hey, I'm always here.
You think there's enough room on the internet for a part two? I don't know.
Oh, I think I got it covered.
Sounds good, man. Sounds good. I appreciate it.
All right. So I'm going to sign off with the audience. Can you hang on the line for about 1 minute or so while I wrap this up, and then I'll get back with you and we'll say our goodbyes.
All right. Sounds good, man.
All right, Jesse, I'll be back with you in 1 minute. And ladies and gentlemen, everybody here, thank you so very much for listening to episode number 88 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling podcast with special guest Jesse Neal. And I got to tell you, even though it was the longest podcast that we've ever had here and the longest interview, you guys got to listen to it. This is very important. You got to listen to it all the way through. It's worth the listen. Even if you got to split up your time listening to it, give this a listen because this is some good stuff. And another thank you to Jesse Neal for coming on the show tonight. I really, really appreciate it. And as far as my regularly scheduled programming, I'll be on here with you tomorrow to review NXT TakeOver Philly. And then on Sunday to review the Royal Rumble. And then, you know, Monday for Raw, Tuesday for SmackDown, Wednesday for NXT. The week starts over and I'll keep on going. I'll be here to give you all the wrestling content that you need. So, thank you guys again, and I'll see you next time. And believe me, there will be a next time. Just remember to, when you think wrestling, always remember to think Beyond the Ring, the number one wrestling talk channel on the internet today. Again, I'm your host, Big T, and another thank you to Jesse Neal for coming on the show tonight. But you take care. I love you all. Again, I'm your host, Big T, right here with you, and I will see you at the matches. Good night, everybody.